terribly, you may hear.
My best friend was killed.
Oh, I wasn't thinking of that.
You know, it seems to me if you're going to kill someone, you at least know them real well.
See what happened to Canada last night?
No, what?
She got killed in the driving.
Oh, shit. What was playing?
Damn my soul by allowing these women to drain my precious fluids.
This is Richard Haynes, writer, producer, director of Splatter University from 1983, and you're listening to The Hysteria Continues.
Yes, welcome back to The Hysteria Continues, episode 19. And as you can probably guess from that, we are dedicating, at least half of this episode to the momentous slasher classic that is Splatter University, chosen by our very dear Nathan. Welcome, Nathan.
Hello, Justin, Eric, and Joseph. And the hysteria does continue.
Indeed it does. Yes, thank you. And how are we doing today, Eric?
Stop, collaborate, and listen. Hysteria continues back with a brand new edition. It doesn't quite flow that well, but I'm getting there. I'm working on it.
You are. It's kind of like, I'm not sure who I would compare you to.
Vanilla Ice.
Vanilla Ice, okay. Yeah. Or Elaine Page, or one of the other, yes. And Joseph, welcome back.
Thanks for having me, buddy.
Yes, our pleasure. Absolutely. And welcome back if you're a new listener or an old listener or someone who's just found us by mistake. We're very glad to have you, as it were. So, yes, this episode we're going to be talking about Splatter University a little bit later. And we have Nathan has been speaking to the star of Splatter University and also the director of the film. And we will find out if our opinions have changed of the film. I wasn't particularly keen on it when I watched it many moons ago, but who knows, maybe things have changed. So we're also going to be talking a little bit some of our recently seen films and a little bit of feedback. And also we've got something quite excited about. We're going to be doing top three slasher trailers. So it's our favourite trailers. And again, we love feedback. So if you don't agree with us or you do agree with us, then write back and tell us. So what we've been watching, guys. How about you, Joseph?
Last night I watched Death Valley, the 1982 film with Ralphie from Christmas Story.
Mm.
And I thought it was so-so. I mean, it had a lot of good scenes, but it's one of those movies that you watch once and you really have no desire to go back and watch again, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, it was... Go on.
No, I was just saying, I kind of liked the idea of having a little kid as the hero, and then I liked the killer was kind of, you know, out there and particularly nutty, but I don't know, I just... It didn't really wow me one way or another.
Hmm. I do love the scene in the trailer home, you know, the when the woman's making a sandwich.
Sounds exciting.
Yeah.
Yeah, and Justin, I have a question. In your review for Death Valley, you mentioned that you hate or you think the game Simon is infuriating, and I want to know why.
I love Simon.
I love Simon.
I do too. I'm trying to remember.
Is it the noise?
It could be. I think it's the repetitive nature of it, isn't it?
Yes.
Yeah. But then again, these reviews, the Death Valley review was probably written about 7 or 8 years ago, I imagine. So I can't remember these things. You can't ask me about things I wrote so long ago because I can't remember why I hated it. Which
you need to start remembering because, you know, that really made me mad.
Okay.
You shouldn't hate Simon.
I do apologize.
What did Simon ever do to you?
Well, I probably went through a Christmas with my little brother or sister playing it incessantly for, you know, 12 hours and, you know, or something like that. It's probably the reason.
Whilst you were trying to listen to your Bauhaus albums.
I expect that probably was the case, yes. But
yeah, every time you hear beep, 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 his eyeliner would kind of smudge when he was playing it.
Well, just I can't even remember. What kind of sound does it make?
Those sounds. Like beep, 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 beep.
I wonder if it's
really loud buzzing noises every time you hit the colors.
Oh, okay. Because I'm trying to remember. I could try to remember how it goes.
See, this is a retro toy episode of The Hysteria Continues today.
Yeah. Well, what's this? This is. Let's have a look. Is it like that?
No, sort of like that. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, can't imagine why I ever found that annoying. But, okay, So, have you been watching anything else, Joseph?
Yes. I watched Mad Men again last night.
Oh, and God.
This is a movie I need to. This is a movie I need to stop watching because I kind of want to retain some, you know, good memories of it. But the more I watch it, the less I like it. This is a movie that has so much potential. It is very atmospheric and has a very scary killer, but they just botch it. I mean, that seemingly endless hot tub scene and the scene where they're all laying on the floor, you know, talking existentially about BS. It just goes nowhere. And I don't really remember any of the character's name except for the guy who has TP as his initials because I called him toilet paper. But I don't know. It's a movie that could have been better.
Yeah, I'm sure it's one we'll cover at some point, isn't it, on the podcast? I know it's one that you really hate, isn't it, Nathan?
Well, I don't want to say that I hate it because what's weird about me and Joe is the more he watches it, the less he likes it. But the more I watch it, the more I can pick out a few things that I like.
Okay.
But I think we're both in agreement that I might give it a 4 or 5 out of 10. I'd hate it, but it's like Joe said, it's got so much potential, but it doesn't quite, you know, like make it to the top tier slashers where I think that it could have, but it just isn't quite good enough.
Well, we shall see whether you think Splatter University makes it to the top tier or the bottom tier a little bit later.
Our friend Grant really liked Mad Men, though, surprisingly enough.
But he doesn't care about story. All he cares about is atmosphere. So you need to show him Scream, the 1981 Scream.
I think he might like that. Maybe.
Okay, well, what about you, Nathan? Have you been watching the same things as Joseph?
I have, and I did watch one other one, and actually it's kind of funny because Simon plays a role in this movie, too. It's Pod People, which is made by the same guy that brought us Pieces.
Okay.
I don't know if I could really call it a slasher. It's got some slasher qualities to it because it's basically about a rock band who are just terrible. And they're in an RV, and they end up getting stranded at this house with this mom and son and dad. And there's this alien that the son has taken in as a pet and is hiding it from everybody. But there's also another alien who's kind of the bad one and starts killing them off one by one. So, I mean, it's cheesy enough for me to like it.
Okay, I haven't even heard of that one. Do you say it's like a really bad band? Is it Spandau Ballet?
It's bad.
I heard that.
Yes. Not impressed.
You're not impressed. Oh, Eric, you're so easy to wind up. Just wait until you get onto Toy a little bit later. But we won't do that. But Pod People sounds quite interesting. I've not even heard of that. So
I haven't heard of it either.
No.
But if it's from the director of Pieces, I'm all for it.
I love slugs.
Well, it's interesting because, like, the evil alien, he's not really evil. Like, his first encounter is with these two hunters, and the hunters are kind of, you know, scared of it, so they, you know, like, fight it and stuff. So it basically takes on this idea of, oh, okay, well, all humans must be evil. I got to kill them. So it starts killing off all the band members and stuff when they're stranded. So it's a interesting movie.
Kind of makes you sort of wish that someone like Sarah Palin would be hunting that alien and they might go after her instead. So, but anyway, we won't get political. Anything else, Nathan?
No, that was it, except for one, and I think you're going to talk about it.
Yes. Okay, well, how about you, Eric?
Okay, well, the one I watched is not strictly, well, it's not even a horror film or a slasher film, but I'm bringing it up for a particular reason.
It's not
reason.
Dirty Dancing again, is it?
It's not Dirty Dancing. God. Don't panic. This is a film I've been waiting to see for a while because you are probably familiar, Justin, with the glory of Adam and Joe, the British comedy duo. Mm. They do a fantastic radio show on BBC. And Joe Cornish has just directed his first film. It's called Attack the Block. It's a kind of a sci-fi action comedy. Now, the reason I'm bringing it up is that, as well as being really rather good, I was listening to the commentary he does with Edgar Wright. And they both name check the fact that they love slasher films, big fan of horror films in general, but they do single out Friday the 13th Part 2 and Halloween as their favorites.
Okay.
So I have my fingers crossed that maybe Joe or Edgar might branch out into horror, maybe do a slasher film. It would be fantastic. But I mean, if you are interested in just kind of fun, popcorn-y sci-fi films, then I think you would like Attack the Block. I think you've seen it, Joseph, haven't you?
Yes, I loved Attack the Block. I love the creatures with the glowing fangs. That was really neat. Mm. some people say that they can't understand a word that the Chav characters are saying, but I didn't really have a problem with it. I mean, I got the gist of it, but
You get the gist. Yeah, he says in the commentary
I'm sorry. One thing I like about the film is that it's one of the rare films that actually makes these Chavs kind of likable.
That's exactly what I thought as well.
They start out, you know, kind of reprehensible, but as the movie goes on, you know, you see that they're basically a bunch of kids trying to, you know, act tough and they're, you know, in the streets, but they're really just a bunch of, you know, scared little kids that have to kind of band together to fight this kind of alien presence. I really, really loved Attack the Block.
Yeah, and it's quite unusual to see what is sort of Hollywood-type filmmaking set in urban London. It's quite unusual.
Oh, absolutely.
Mm. Yeah, I haven't seen it, but I'm quite looking to checking it out when it comes to Blu-ray or DVD.
It is on Blu-ray now. That's where I saw it. Yeah.
Oh, okay. All right. Okay, we'll have to put on the film. Excellent. Okay, well, that's great. And just the only thing I've watched in the week since we last recorded was a film that I often say, although I kind of know, we all four of us know more about slasher movies probably than anyone should, but I always say there's probably some hidden gems or just some films we don't know about out there. And one of those came to light recently. I'm kind of old enough to remember back in the 70s and 80s, at UK cinemas, there would be like an A and a B movie. You know, you have the movie you went to see, but also be a short movie beforehand, or sometimes it'll be a double bill. And one such film was a film called The Dumb Waiter, which was made in 1979. It's a British film, directed by someone called Robert Bierman, who went on to direct a few things. One of them was Apology with, I think, Leslie Ann Warren, or was Leslie Ann Down, which I've never seen. I've got it on video, but I think it's kind of a slasher-esque film, and that's also known as Apology for Murder. He also went on to direct Vampire's Kiss with Nicolas Cage, and a few other things. But it stars Geraldine Page, I think it is, Geraldine James, as a young woman who's basically stalked by somebody and who a killer with a flick knife who's trying to get into her apartment, and he keeps on trying through various ways to get in. And it's basically it's a slash movie through and through, even though it's only 16 minutes long. And it's great little bit of suspense, and without spoiling the ending, because I know, Eric, you've not seen it yet, but to say the film is actually on YouTube. If you just search for The Dumb Waiter 1979, you should be able to find it. But you've both seen it, haven't you, Joseph and Nathan?
Yeah, I watched it last night. I really enjoyed it. I really love the ending, the build-up to the doorbell, and then what happens. I love that. That was just really clever.
Yeah.
I agree. I mean, I think that the way they ended it was really well. And I think the ending, one thing I like about it is it kind of leaves things up to your imagination.
Mm.
Another scene I liked is when she's in the bathtub and he's prowling around, you know, at the windows outside, and you're not sure what window he's at until you actually, you know, go back to her in the bathtub and you realize exactly what window he's at. And it's really rather scary what happens in that scene.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah, it's one to check out, and it's only 16 minutes long, so you can't go too badly wrong with that. So, cool. Well, that's our recently seen. We're recording a week early, all those to be released on track, as it were, because Nathan and Joseph, you're off to, where are you off to? A convention next weekend, aren't you?
A convention in Gatlinburg called Horror Weekend, and we're hoping to slum it with a lot of the stars, including Eric's boy, Mark Patton.
Woo! Oh, yeah.
Great. I love Mark Patton. I think he's awesome.
I do, too. He's great.
Yeah.
If you're not his if you're not his Facebook friend, you really should be, because this guy embraces everything about his career. It's just insane.
Mm. Cool. Yeah, that sounds great. Well, you might get, we'll see what you come back with. Hopefully you might get a few little clips for us.
You might get a Jesse on the phone.
You might get a Jesse on the phone.
I'll do my best.
Cool.
Might get one from Monique.
Oh, yeah, I could probably get one from her.
Who's Monique?
Was she ever in a slasher film?
The actress?
Well, a Bikini Bloodbath Christmas is a slasher film.
Oh, well. Hey, nice. I've met her once.
It counts, you know.
Okay.
I would like to get something else from her, but, you know, I'll see what I can do.
Ooh, right, okay. Well, we won't go there anyway. Well, why don't we move swiftly on to feedback? Because we said we'd have a few left over from last time. I'll start with one from Xavier. And he says, "Hola, Justin. I just recently started listening to your podcast, The Hysteria Continues, and got instantly hooked. I'm listening to them on my iPod while I work here in the sublime city of New York. I was raised on slasher genre films when I was a teenager living in Puerto Rico back in the glorious 70s and 80s, and I'm gulping your podcasts like sweet, delightful poison pills to provide a shot of much-needed nostalgia and stimulate me to go rewatch those films again, and even better, introduce me to some films I'd totally missed, like Fatal Games and Lake Mungo. Thank you and your fellow friends, reviewers, for all the bloody pleasure. When I saw that you dedicated a podcast to exploring J.S. Cardone's The Slayer, I knew you were the real thing. That film is a great favourite of mine, and I watch it at least a couple of times a year. It's such a scary little nightmare. I hope that sometime you can have a podcast for such obscure but undeniably culty films such as Silent Night, Bloody Night, and soon The Darkness, the original and the remake. I just ordered my copy of Teenage Wasteland, plug plug. This is the kind of thing that makes life worth leaving. I mean, living. You all have such good taste. Please keep these shows coming. Sincerely, Xavier." So, thank you, Xavier. That's always a nice bit of feedback.
Thank you, Xavier.
Yeah. Okay, well, how about you guys? What about you, Eric? Have you got anything for us?
Yeah, I do. I've got one from Declan Gallagher, and I'm just wondering if Declan is Irish with a name like that. He says, "I've got a little question for you four. When you created your show, did you secretly tap into my head and make a show about exactly what I want to hear about, and indeed think about, every day? Jesus, I just can't love your show enough. Pardon me while I fanboy all over the place. I discovered your show about 2 weeks ago, thanks to buying a copy of Chopping Mall and seeing your IMDb post, and I've listened to everyone about twice. I think I might be addicted, but in all seriousness, it's nice to know I'm not the only one out there who knows Leslie Donaldson's entire filmography or can talk about weird and obscure movies to no end. When I listen to your show, it's like hanging out with a bunch of kindred spirits. If you ever stop making shows, I'm going to come after you all with my scythe." That's from Declan Gallagher. Declan is from, but thank you very much, Declan.
Thank you, Declan. Thank you, Declan.
Very nice to hear that. I also have one here from Paul, who describes himself as a geologist, as in somebody who specializes in giallos.
Okay.
Cool. He says, "Hey, Justin and crew, I just wanted to write and say thank you for all of your effort in making the Hysteria Continues podcast. It's refreshing to hear intellectual."
Yeah.
"It's refreshing to hear intellectual and also hilarious dissections of films that are often dismissed as bottom shelf trash. You officially have a new dedicated listener in me, and I look forward to hearing what comes next. I'm also really looking forward to putting in my order for Teenage Wasteland, Justin. I came upon the podcast while looking up reviews for the book, and I'm glad to say your work on the podcast alone is enough to sell me on the book. Also, you mentioned in an earlier show that you had a link to download a slasher music compilation that you put together. I wouldn't mind the link when you get a chance. Keep up the fantastic work, fellas. Cheers from Paul." Well, thank you for that, Paul.
Paul, remind me if I send that on to you, because I can't remember if I have. If I haven't, then let me know and I'll send it on. And the same goes for anyone.
I can put it on
else.
The Facebook page so everyone can download it.
Okay, that'd be great. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Excellent.
And I have one more here. It's from Seth, who lives in Dallas, Texas, the home of the wonderful Joy Tipping from The Initiation. He says, "Hey guys, my name is Seth. I just started listening to your podcast and I'm loving it. It's nice to see a podcast totally devoted to the wonderful slasher genre. There is an overabundance of horror movie podcasts, but surprisingly little devoted to just one subgenre like slashers, so that is refreshing. Not only do you guys have a great knowledge of the genre, you also have a great sense of humor, and the diversity of the group allows for a wide range of different opinions on each movie. The show is excellently put together. You guys are always great about getting straight to the movie review, and the interviews are really awesome. I don't have any movie suggestions because I'm pretty sure you guys have mentioned every slasher movie I know of at least once. But here's an idea for the top three segment if you haven't already done this. How about a top three slasher twists, reveals, climaxes? Off the top of my head, my favorite would probably be the wonderful climax of Friday the 13th, thanks to the equally hilarious and scary performance from Betsy Palmer, or possibly the haunting ending to Anthropophagus, where George Eastman eats his own intestines in a fit of insanity. Anyways, just thought I would chime in and say hi. Keep up the great work, and I will definitely keep listening. Thanks, Seth from Dallas, Texas."
Well, thank you, Seth.
Thank you, Seth. I think we have discussed the possibility of doing top three twist endings, but that would mean 12 spoiler-tastic moments in the podcast.
Yes. Well, we can keep on thinking about it and see if we can do it in a way that isn't too spoiler-esque, but I'm not quite sure how we would do that, but we'll put some thought to it. How about you, Joseph and Nathan? Have you got anything for us?
I have he never does. Oh. I have six.
Somebody
actually
wants me.
Oh. Yeah. Anyway, go on then, Joseph.
I'm going to get through these. This is from BTK on the forums, and he says, Dear Hysteria Continues, fuck you. Sincerely, BTK.
Oh, bless him.
Thank you, BTK. This is from the initials VF. He says, greetings, fellow Shock and Terror Maniacs. Love, love, love the podcast, and while I am fairly knowledgeable in the horror field, I find that my experience with classic giallo is left wanting. In other words, I've seen Suspiria, and that's it. Shame sets in. Help! If each of you could recommend one or two of what you consider to be the best of the genre, I'd greatly appreciate it. A giallo primer, of course, if you will. Keep up the great work, guys. All the best, VF. And I think we will be having a giallo episode coming up soon, won't we, Justin?
We will, indeed. I think the next one after this, the next main episode, will be dedicated to a giallo double bill. And I was actually thinking what we could do is we could all list our top three personal giallo picks as our kind of top three lists. So
all giallo episode coming for you, VF.
Absolutely. Yeah, so that would be good. That all and we didn't write that one ourselves, did we? That actually was a proper message. So thank you for sending that through. You got a couple more, Joseph?
Oh, yes. Dan Dominguez writes in again. He says, hi, guys. In preparation for the Fatal Game podcast, I watched it on YouTube. I'd never heard of this movie and was really surprised listening to the podcast afterwards how much you guys liked it. I just could not find my way into this film. It's typical of my response to films like Fatal Games that though that failed to really build any sense of mood or atmosphere. I can forgive a film many things. Humongous and the Slayer come to mind if it just creates a creepy atmosphere. There's just something depressing, though, about a film this atmosphere-less and inept. The music, the acting, the stalking scenes, and I found myself checking my email and visiting other websites. I knew from the get-go that Sally Kirkland was the killer, big spoiler, and the reveal of her motive at the end, while a surprise, was truly groan-inducing. And why exactly does her voice change at the end? Who knows, and I had long since given up caring. But as always, I enjoyed listening to the podcast more than the movie, really. I did want to alert you guys to a website called Cinema Treasures, which archives information about current and long-gone movie theaters and palaces across the world. When I looked up the theater in my hometown that showed independent horror films in the early 80s, I found some pictures of the theater during that time. I was much too young to go see these films when they came out, but I would walk by this theater all the time as a kid, salivating at the titles and movie posters on the marquee. But check out this link, and he gives us a link to AmericanClassicImages.com, and pay close attention to the poster out front. It's a bit hard to make out, but I'm sure it's the poster for The Slayer. I know that in your podcast for the film, you were hard-pressed to find places in the U.S. where it played, but apparently in October of 1982, it played in my hometown of Harrison, New Jersey. Thanks for all your great work. Looking forward to Chopping Mall. Dan Dominguez.
Great. Thank you, Dan. Any more?
Yes, a couple more. This is from Pat Sidon, I guess some kind of nickname, but he says, just wanted to say I love your podcast. I bought Chopping Mall a few weeks ago and was on here reading about it, and I saw this and immediately looked your show up. Since then, I think I've listened to every episode at least twice. It's so awesome to hear other people who love cheesy horror movies as much as I do. And who actually discussed them without irony. Seriously, great stuff. I can't get enough of it. It's like crack for me. If you guys did 12 shows a day, I'd still want more. That's from Pat Sidon.
Okay. Well, it'd be interesting to see if we can...
Sidon or whatever his name is. But
be interesting to see if we can discuss Splatter University without any irony later, but we shall see. and you got one more?
Yeah, I got two more. This is from the Internet Movie Database. He says, listening to the Killer Party episode right now. May the big man in the sky and the big dark rogue one from the ending of Equinox bless you. You're the best. Eagle 79-1.
Thank you, Eagle.
Thank you, Eagle.
Yes, thank you. And this is from Mark Jones. He writes, hi there, lads. I've been listening to your podcast since the House of Death episode and love each episode more and more. Excellent interviews, funny banter, and great info on the films from my favorite subgenre. The My Bloody Valentine episodes were great, and I was impressed you used a track from the excellent band My Bloody Valentine to finish one of your episodes on, although I would have chose the track When You Sleep from the Loveless album. Can't wait for the next episode, and after hearing Nathan is choosing the main feature, I'm guessing he's going with either Splatter University or Don't Go in the Woods. I would be very happy with either of them choices, even though I'm sure you guys would disagree. Some films I hope you may be covering soon are The Burning, the Sleepaway Camp films, especially Part 2, The Final Terror, The Mutilator, The Prowler, and last but not least, Unhinged. I know you may frown upon my later choice, but I find it very creepy and atmospheric with a great synth score, even though there is some diabolical acting in it. Keep up the good work, lads. Mark Jones.
Oh, well, thank you very much, Mark. Yes. And just one last bit of feedback from our friend Mick Hucknall, or Mark Hucknall.
Mick Hucknall.
Mick Hucknall is back. And he wrote to
me.
You have
to say it in that voice, or else it doesn't work.
he wrote to me on Twitter, and he said how much he enjoyed the last one. And he said especially, I think he was being a little bit ironic, actually, about cat flushing a toilet. And he just basically says something like, please, Jesus, don't play the Badger song. So, of course, I looked up what the Badger song was. Do you know what the Badger song is?
No.
Do we want to know?
Well, here you go. There's a little bit of the Badger song for Mick. So there you go. That goes out for Mick in wherever you are, Mick. So
I like the cat flushing the toilet song better.
Yes.
That Badger song is still better than anything Simply Red ever produced.
That is true.
Or anything Susie put out.
No, that is, except that
how
isn't
dare
true.
You say that Saturday.
It is Susie Saturday.
It's Susie Saturday.
I had to get the hatred between you two started.
Well.
Somehow.
It will simmer. It will simmer until a little bit later, because I think we are going to move swiftly on, like the professionals that we are, to our top three trailers, I think. Or actually, before we do that, do you want to give the email address, Joseph?
Oh, yes. If you would like to write in, the email address is the.hysteria.continues@gmail.com. And you can find us on Facebook, search for The Hysteria Continues, and you can find us on Twitter. That is twitter.com/THC_podcast.
Great. And we have a trailer on YouTube, our own trailer.
Yes, search for The Hysteria Continues trailer on YouTube, and you will see a trailer that I and my brother put together for The Hysteria Continues.
Yes, and talking of YouTube, I've been putting up some videos of my memorabilia. I've just done one for Hell Night, which should be up by the time this goes out. So just search for Hysteria Lives on YouTube and see what I've got to show. As it were. So, okay. I think that's the right thing I was talking about anyway. So we're going to go on now to slasher trailers, our top three. And obviously the irony, I kind of guess, is you can't see the trailers, but you'll be able to hear them. And I'm probably not speaking alone by saying that I love slasher trailers. And quite often the trailer is better than the movie. And there's a certain art to them, and certainly going back to when I was a kid, and I've spoken about this before, but I think a formative moment for me was going to the cinema and seeing the trailer for Visiting Hours. It's not one of the ones I've picked this time, but I remember seeing the trailer when I must have been maybe 10 or 11 at the cinema, and then wanting, not being able to see the films, but every time I saw a trailer, I'd be thinking how amazing the films would be, and those kind of TV trailers and all those kind of little snippets, they really kind of got the adrenaline pumping and really made me want to see them, which is obviously the idea of a good trailer. So we thought it'd be fun to choose our top three trailers, and what we're going to do is we're going to count through them. I'm going to start with Nathan's now, and obviously I'm not going to actually say what this is until it's played, and then Nathan, you're going to talk a little bit about it, and we're going to talk about each after each one why we chose them. So this is Nathan's number three.
Every year the finalists for the Miss Cheerleader USA contest travel to this secluded camp.
Hey, there is no going back.
For some, it will be the crowning achievement of their lives.
I'm gonna win that queen contest.
Nerves are on edge.
There's something eating at everybody, right?
Ever since we've been here, it's never a good night.
Jealousies are exposed, and hatreds explode. This year, Something evil has come over the contestants.
And she shows I'm going to kill her.
The instructors.
You're a mascot, not a human.
The judges. And the hired help.
How you die.
Something is about to make them all victims of bloody pom-poms.
You start with Allison. She's so fine. The look at her long or you'll go blind. Next is Pam. She comes out with a bam and will tell you this, she ain't no sham. Next is Bonnie. She acts kind of funny. Steal your heart, but not your money. Can't forget Teresa. She's got what it takes. Putting her on this team was no mistake. Last is Corey. This is her story. She's our gator. You'll be seeing her later.
Bloody pom-poms. Betsy Russell. Leif Garrett. Lucinda Dickey. Laurie Griffin.
We gotta walk out of here.
It's at least 40 miles.
Finally, something to die for.
Okay, Nathan, do you want to take it away?
Yeah, that was the trailer for Bloody Pom-Poms, or as it's more popularly known, Cheerleader Camp. I've always been a huge fan of the movie, and I think the trailer is really funny and very cheesy, and I love that. And especially the rap. I mean, when they do the rap song about all the girls, I think that's awesome. That's one of the main reasons I picked that trailer, actually.
Yeah, it's a fun trailer for a fun movie, isn't it? And I was going to say that we'll put these up, Joseph, won't we, on the Hysteria Continues Facebook page?
Yes, I will supply links to these trailers, so keep an eye out for those in the next couple of days after you listen to this.
Cool. Yeah, excellent. And obviously, I love listening to trailers on other podcasts, so hopefully this is going to be enjoyable for everyone. But if you want to see the gory mayhem and the cheesy fashions and all those kind of stuff, and go to the Hysteria Continues Facebook page to check them out. Good choice, Nathan. And anyone else want to say anything about Bloody Pom-Poms?
I love the movie. It's really fun. I saw it first time for about 15 years ago, and it's one of those movies that I think gets better every time I watch it. I always pick out little bitty tidbits that I like. It's just a really fun movie, and that's a really fun trailer, I think.
Great. Okay. Well, let's move on to Eric's number three.
Warning. What you will see in the movie Pieces cannot be revealed, cannot be described, cannot even be imagined. And you don't have to go to Texas for a chainsaw massacre. Pieces, it's exactly what you think it is. Pieces. Absolutely no one under 17 will be admitted.
Okay, Eric.
Well, of course, that is the glorious Pieces trailer. All my choices actually have one thing in common, and that is that they're all, I suppose, what you would call teaser trailers. They don't feature any footage from the actual films. And they're exactly the kind of trailers I love. I love seeing how they are trying to manipulate the audience. And Pieces is trying to make the film look like it's quite a serious and violent piece of work, comparing it with Texas Chainsaw Massacre, not showing the audience how cheesy the finished product actually is. I think that's terrific, and I absolutely adore the line, "It's exactly what you think it is."
And that's what it was on the posters, wasn't it? That that line.
Yeah.
And that trailer has a very good narrative announcer going over it. I love that whole Don LaFontaine kind of deal going on.
Yeah.
I love that trailer. I'm only jealous I didn't think of it myself.
Yeah, me too.
It shows a couple of glimpses of somebody wielding a chainsaw and somebody screaming, but that's all it shows. The rest of it is sort of what the narrator is saying sort of appears on the screen, you know, white text on a black background.
You don't have to go to Texas for a chainsaw massacre. I love that. I love that line. That's just great.
That's brilliant, isn't it? Yeah. I mean, it'd be great. I'd love to do a Pieces podcast at some point soon. So.
I'd love to just find out if anyone went to that expecting another Texas Chainsaw Massacre and to see their reaction coming out It'd be amazing.
Hey, sign me up for a Pieces podcast. I am down.
Yeah.
Well, I think we all would be, yeah.
Yes. Yes.
If only we could get Linda Day.
We could pretend they're doing something else. We could maybe one of her bonnet dramas or something.
And yeah. Just,
if she did any of those, I don't know. But yeah, great. Okay, well, going on to Joseph's number three.
Tonight on the CBS Saturday Night Movies, this gentle man saved this little girl's life, but they accused him of harming her.
Do this ourselves.
And he was tragically murdered. Now, one by one, the men of this town are dying. Who is his avenger? Is it the dead man's grief-stricken mother?
They killed my boy!
The little girl who loved him.
I know what you did to Baba.
Or could it be the Scarecrow? Night of the Scarecrow, coming up next.
Okay, Joseph, why did you choose that?
I'm sorry, that was the television spot for Dark Knight of the Scarecrow. And what I like about that is it kind of reminds me of a time when, back in the early to mid 80s, when, you know, someone in my family would be watching something like Simon and Simon or McMillan and Wife or some cheesy CBS show like that. And then during the commercials, you'd see this like 20 to 30 second clip of this, like, these made for TV films, and that one always stuck with me. So that's one of the reasons I picked it. Another reason is it's got that narration thing I like with the, or is it the Scarecrow? I love narrations like that. The Pieces trailer had that really well, I think. But that's pretty much the reasons why I picked it. Plus, I love Dark Knight of the Scarecrow. I think it's probably pound for pound one of the best, if not the best, made for TV slasher films ever.
Mm. And there's a great DVD of it now, isn't there? Out by, is it Elite? Or I can't remember who put it out. But that's definitely worth picking up. And it's got that trailer on it as well, I think.
Wasn't it Blue Underground that put that out?
Oh, it might well have been, actually.
I'm not 100% sure. But anyway, it's a great film. And I love those little TV spots. So just to reiterate. But that's my number three.
Great. Okay. Well, thank you, Joseph. This is my number three. Here we go.
This summer, if you're planning to go camping, don't. If you're looking forward to midnight swims, don't.
I'm gonna sneak on back to the campsite, get some matches, build us a hot fire.
And if you're thinking about being with someone where no one can see you, don't. Because this summer, a legend of terror isn't just a campfire story anymore.
They say he smashed his way through the bunk room door, just a mass of flames. Burned alive, cried out, I will return! I will have my revenge! He lives on whatever he can catch right now. Out there, watching, waiting.
Who's there?
What happened one summer 5 years ago is about to happen again, and again, and again. The Burning.
Yeah, well, without giving too much away, all of my choices from 1981, the hallowed year, slash year, that is 1981, and that was The Burning. And as we've already spoken about, that amazing voiceover, the kind of gruff male voice. I think you were saying, Joseph, weren't you, that is it one man did many of these films? Many
actually, there's three or four. Don LaFontaine was more the theatrical guy, and the guy who did the television spots, I can't remember his name. There were like three different ones, but I know Don LaFontaine, he recently passed away. He did a lot of the theatrical spots, and there was another guy that did theatrical spots, not as many as him, but the guy that did The Burning. His name is like on the tip of my tongue, but I just can't place it. But yeah, like you, I love those narrations. They make the trailers, I think.
And what I really like about that particular trailer is the way it emphasizes, as well, another one of my choices, the whole body count thing. And Eric, you were talking about Edgar Wright, who is sort of saying it'd be great if he did a slasher movie. And of course, with Grindhouse, Eli Roth did Homecoming, I think it was called, wasn't it?
Thanksgiving.
Thanksgiving, that was it, sorry. Which was kind of the 80s slasher parody. But Edgar Wright did his kind of 70s kind of slasher horror parody called Don't, wasn't it? And it was a kind of parodying that kind of don't go into, go into the water.
It sounds
don't
exactly like that Burning trailer, actually.
Yeah, yeah. So it's quite funny. But that's what, you know, I love. And so I reckon he would do a really good slasher movie. So, yeah, hopefully he'll do that. So, yeah, that's my number three.
You know what's funny is I almost picked the Thanksgiving trailer, but I thought it would be a cheat because it's not a real movie, because I love that trailer.
It's terrific, I think, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, it's brilliant, isn't it? Okay, well, I think we know what's coming next, don't we?
Yes.
But
yes.
Play us.
Do we want it being played or not?
Yes, we do.
Yes.
You do. Well, I haven't even set this up, so because I didn't think we were going to do that. So, okay. While I'm doing this. There's quite a lot of different cat flushing toilet water bill. No, we'll just go for this one again. And apologies to Mick. But
he's
here
we go. Flushing the toilet, he's a cat. 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 Flushing the toilet.
Okay. Yes.
that will never get old.
No.
That's because it was never fresh in the first place. But here we go. This is Nathan's number two.
Anything can happen when you're alone in the dark.
Are you afraid of the dark?
Sometimes. Sort of fun.
When I was a little kid, I was scared to death to be alone in the dark. I always knew that there was something that I couldn't see that wanted to get me.
Oh, hold on. What's the matter now?
In the closet.
Oh my God.
Or outside the window. But the worst thing of all is the thing under the bed. Billy? It isn't real.
This is a very serious situation.
I know that we're all a little on edge here tonight, but let's take it easy, okay? I mean, this is an old house. There are all kinds of sounds.
Jack Palance, Donald Pleasence, Martin Landau, Dwight Schultz, Erland van Lith. Alone in the Dark, from New Line Cinema.
Okay, well, I think that film was called possibly Alone in the Dark. Nathan, why did you choose it?
I chose it because I saw it and I actually thought it was a creepy trailer. And I really love the idea of, you know, this woman telling this little girl about all the things she was scared of in the dark. And they intercut that with clips of things like that happening later in the movie. And I thought that was an interesting idea to go. And plus, I love that announcer's voice and the fact that he keeps going alone in the dark.
Yeah,
one of my secret shames is I still have not seen Alone in the Dark.
Have you not?
Oh, my God.
Really?
No, I still haven't seen it.
Gosh, well, that'd be a good one to do for another podcast, wouldn't it? If you've not seen it, if you see it fresh.
Yeah, I've been meaning to catch it, but for some reason I've just never gotten around to it. But I will rectify that soon.
Okay, right. Well, okay. Well, we'll move swiftly on, shall we? To Eric, do you want a little bit of your cat flushing a toilet, or you?
Oh, please, yes.
Okay.
Flushing the toilet, he's a cat. Flushing the toilet, he's a cat. Flushing the toilet.
Yay.
I can see all those people turning this podcast off one by one as the lights go out. But here we go. It's your number two, Eric.
Before your funeral and your coffin lid is closed, before you are buried and your flesh turns cold, before you are covered with the last shovelful of dirt, be sure you are really dead. Mortuary.
Yes, the trailer with the famous elephant roar at the end of it. Why did you choose that one, Eric?
Well, as I said, I love trailers that don't feature any footage from the film, and this features actually footage that's not seen anywhere else. It's Michael Berryman digging a grave, and then towards the end of it, he's dragged into the grave by sort of some kind of zombie. And this is a trailer, of course, for Mortuary, which is we've covered on the podcast before. It's very much a straight up slasher film with no supernatural element to it whatsoever. And I suppose if Pieces was trying to deceive the audience, then I don't know what Mortuary was trying to do. It's really, really trying to deceive them. As I think you mentioned before, Justin, that it was coming out at sort of the tail end of the slasher boom.
Yeah.
So they probably were trying to market it more as a zombie type film, because like Evil Dead would have been out at that stage. And, you know, we were about to get Return of the Living Dead and Day of the Dead. So a complete cheat, a complete and utter cheat. And that's why I love it.
Well, it's kind of like the film poster as well, isn't it? And also the video cover of the hand thing at the grave. Mm. Has got nothing at all to do with the film, really, has it? Apart from the mortuary.
It should have the poster should have Bill Paxton skipping through the tombstones.
That would have been a better representation. Yeah, excellent, great.
Well, I met Michael Berryman, about a year ago. He came into town, and I talked to him about that trailer. And he said that the director of that trailer, they couldn't get the shots that he wanted. And eventually he had a big meltdown and started kicking and punching things all around the set. And Michael said the whole time he was doing that, he was trying to hold in his laughter because it was hysterical, basically.
Wow. Okay.
Wow.
Well, it sounds like it was directed by Paris Hilton or something.
But where do you live when you just have Michael Berryman coming into town? I mean,
well, they had a convention here in Chattanooga.
Okay. Right. Okay. Well, that explains it. He wasn't sort of just popping in, you know.
He wasn't coming to see me in particular. No.
Okay. Well, it'd be great if he was.
At the front door, going, "Hi, Nathan. It's only me."
Yeah. Like, oh yeah. Scary, before we go to the Burger King, grab a hamburger. See you there.
Right. Okay. Well, we're moving on to Joseph's number two.
Yes, I do.
You do. Oh, okay. Here we go. Right. Okay.
I do like to watch the water go down.
Talking of cats, Gilbert has just come into the room. So knowing what he's like, if I start getting distracted, it's because he's doing his stuff. But while that happens, Joseph, here's your number two.
You can run from Suspiria. You can hide from Suspiria, but you cannot escape Suspiria. Rated R.
Okay, Joseph, why did you choose Suspiria?
Well, in case you couldn't tell, that was the trailer for 1978 Savage Water. Basically. No, I like that trailer for Suspiria. It's the little TV spot. Again, it's short, to the point, and it has that narration that Suspiria. Like I said, I love those narrations. And it's intercut with like clips of scenes from the film, and it's just one of those little creepy spots, you know, that they used to show on television that they don't anymore. So it's a nostalgia thing for me.
And we can talk about this a little bit more next time when we do the Giallo show. But Suspiria's not really classed as giallo, is it? But I personally think it is a giallo, a supernatural.
It is. Giallo. I'd say it is.
Yeah. But it's funny because it's never really talked in those kind of terms, is it?
No, not really.
No. But excellent. Well, okay. As everyone else has had a little bit of it, I still have a little bit of, and dear listener, this is the last time you have to go through it this week. Okay, enough of that. The novelty is wearing off fast. But here's my big number two.
I shot him six times. I shot him in the heart. The man is—he's not human.
Universal Pictures presents Halloween 2: More of the Night He Came Home.
Within him, neither conscience nor reason that wasn't even remotely human.
This is some kind of a joke. I've been trick-or-treated to death tonight.
You don't know what death is.
Janet, go tell Mr. Garrett we're having trouble with the phones.
There is no place to hide. He will always find you.
What's this?
It's a Celtic word. It means the Lord of the Dead.
Well, I couldn't let it go without a Halloween trailer. And the Halloween, well, trailer for Halloween 2 is probably, well, I think it's definitely my favourite of the trailers for Halloween films. I just love it. I love the music, and I would have loved to have seen that in front of another film at the cinema in 1980 or 81 or whenever they were putting a trailer out for the film. It's everything that I love about slash movie trailers. And we were going to talk a little bit about, I know time's running on, but there was obviously a controversy recently about the Blu-ray that Universal put out of Halloween 2. I've got my copy now, and I've watched bits of it. I haven't watched the whole of the film, but it's a great disc. Halloween 2's never looked better. The first time I've ever seen it in its proper screen ratio, and it looks amazing. Also, the is it Terror in the Isles? I think that's, yes.
Yeah.
Terror in the Isles as an extra in high definition as well looks great. And I know people have got mixed feelings about that that film, but I really like it. I think it's cut together really, really well, and it's a great kind of time capsule for the time. We're going to talk about it, and we talk about it very quickly now. But what's interesting is basically the controversy, if you didn't know, was that Mustafa Akkad's name was taken off. Universal off the Blu-ray. But what's quite interesting is, and this caused a big stink, obviously people were upset about it, and he's kind of known as the father of Halloween, or the grandfather of Halloween. And but actually, when you look at the trailer, which is released in 81, it says Universal Pictures presents Halloween 2. So I think it was probably an honest mistake on their part rather than something being, you know, a major snub. What did you guys think?
Yeah, I'd agree with you. I think it probably was just an unfortunate mistake. I'm surprised at the controversy it stirred up. But apparently Universal have agreed to fix it and reprint the discs, which is too late for me because I also have ordered it. It's somewhere across the Atlantic as we speak. So I'll have the one with the Universal logo rather than the Mustafa Akkad Presents logo on it.
Yeah. My advice, actually, for anyone in the UK or Ireland, actually, I got mine off eBay from a seller who says that they'd be shipped from the UK. So they obviously get like a bundle of them from America. And that's it. And I got mine in 4 days. So that was just, you know, for future reference. How about you, Nathan and Joseph? What were your thoughts on the great Mustafa Akkad controversy?
I thought the... you know, they're removing his name. I thought it was a little strange, but I'll go against the crowd and say one way or another, it doesn't really affect me. I mean, it is kind of weird that they would take his name off, you know, considering how much clout he has with the film. But, I mean, if it's an honest mistake and they've, you know, fixed it for future releases, then I guess it's just best to just move on and not make too much of a fuss about it.
Yeah. Okay. What about you, Nathan?
I agree with Joseph. I think, you know, if they agreed to fix it, then that's good. Although I would say for you guys, I would definitely hang on to the earlier versions because they may become collector's items.
That's very true.
Could be worth some money sometime.
That's very true. I was going to say just one very quick aside. When I was in Universal Studios over the summer, just at the theme park there, they've got the Universal House of Horrors, which is really, really good fun. But as you're queuing up, they've got all the posters for all the horror movies Universal put out right back from the creature, you know, sort of features from the 30s right up to the present day. And one of them is obviously for Halloween 2, and Universal put that out. But they have a poster there that I've never seen anywhere else for Halloween 2, and it's kind of a painted image of Michael Myers lunging out of the poster, as it were, with a big butcher's knife. And I've never seen it anywhere else. So I don't know where that came from. But yeah, it's just a little.
Did you get a picture?
I did. Yes, oh, cool. I'll send you one round. But yes, well, that's my...
Well, just on the subject of the Blu-ray, yeah. I just want to quickly say I would have preferred more Halloween 2 specific extras than Terror in the Isles myself. But yeah. I mean, I'm happy enough to watch Terror in the Isles. I don't remember it being terribly brilliant, but...
It's good fun, but there are deleted scenes. It's basically all the scenes from the TV version. And there's one quite funny scene of Jamie Lee Curtis being restrained and given another sedative. And it kind of goes on for a long time. And I know it's completely, you know, sacrilege to say, but she actually does quite a bad job acting in that scene, which may be the reason they cut it out. It's not very believable. It's almost like she's trying not to laugh. Watch it and see what you think. But one big shame actually about the disc is it doesn't have that trailer on it, which is a real shame. But you know, there you go. It's we're never going to see it looking any better. So okay, without further ado, I'm going to push forward to Nathan's big number one.
When darkness descends on the city, something happens to the girls who attend night school.
You're not walking home alone tonight, are you? After what happened?
We'll be all right.
Something secret.
Modern man has only to take a short step to wind up in the primeval jungle of his ancestors.
Something forbidding.
Well, we've had a few kooks in Boston in our time, but headhunters are too many.
Who's there?
lesson in terror. Night School.
Okay, Nathan, do you want to talk us through that?
First of all, I think Night School is a very underrated movie to begin with, and I think it has actually a really, really good trailer. I love the narration, I love the music, and I really love the all the scenes of the women running away from the killer. I mean, you combine all those together, it makes you really want to see the movie. And I love the final scene in the trailer where the woman's like in a really long hallway or something, and she's picked up the phone and she turns around and the killer's like right there, and all of a sudden the door slams closed. So, I mean, I think it's a really, really good trailer.
Yeah, no, it's a great trailer for it's a film I need to go back and watch again. Not one of my favorites, but I think if I see a decent version of it, I probably would like it a lot more. But yeah, that's a great choice.
That's a movie. The more I watch it, the more I like it. It gets better and better, I think.
Cool. Excellent. Okay. Well, I have to keep on stop saying excellent. I keep on saying excellent. It's one of my...
excellent. Mr. Burns.
Sorry?
He's Mr. Burns.
Anyway, we shall move directly on to Eric's... Oh, God, I've got another cat coming in the room now.
It's like the birds, only with cats.
Hey, it is. You play with your pussy on your own time.
I'll do that while we play Eric's number one.
Around the corner.
Okay, Eric, well, hopefully people's eardrums are still intact after that, that shocker.
He actually does shout Freddy's back again, in case you didn't pick that up when they're at the end after the 9-10. That's the teaser trailer for A Nightmare on Elm Street Part 3, Dream Warriors, again featuring no footage from the film. What you have is a girl sitting on a bed. On her lap is the sort of papier-mâché house that Kirsten makes in the film. She's singing the nursery rhyme, and just after she sings 9-10, Freddy's gloved hand bursts through the roof of the house, and then the narrator takes over. There's a number of similar-ish trailers from the late 80s. There was the one for Part 5, Dream Child, does the same type of thing with a pram, the camera goes around it, and it doesn't feature any footage from the film. I'm thinking also of Jason Takes Manhattan, which again, a camera zooms in to a figure standing in front of the Manhattan skyline, and it turns around and it's Jason. Leatherface, Texas Chainsaw Massacre 3, did something similar with a spoof take on Excalibur, with a sort of a hand in the lake coming out and wielding a chainsaw. All of them are terrific. The one I chose, Dream Warriors, I just remember seeing that trailer on film 87, it would have been, with Barry Norman, if you remember him. Justin, I'm sure you do. He was a very famous British film critic.
Yeah.
He wasn't very fond of Nightmare on Elm Street Part 3, I do remember.
He wasn't very fond of any horror movies, was he?
No. But yeah, again, my love of teaser trailers that tantalize you, again, shows through there. That's my number one, Dream Warriors.
Well, I won't say excellent. I'll say brilliant. that's a great one.
I know you're not a fan of the Elm Street films, I don't think, Justin, are you anymore? I mean, I do admit they have dated more than any other 80s franchise, but I still have a soft spot for them.
I really like the first and the second one. I really like New Nightmare. It's funny, I've actually kind of... The more I've grown to appreciate some films, I found Nightmare on Elm Street films have kind of waned in interest for me, really. But that's just me.
I love the first three, actually.
Hmm.
And I tell you what, Wayne's for me is the Halloween series, as sacrilege that is. That is. Mm-hmm. I love Halloween 1 and Halloween 2, but after that, I just don't really care that much.
Mm-hmm. I'm one of the few who actually enjoys the slasherless Halloween 3 as well.
Mm. Well, I do as well. That's a great film.
Mm.
So, okay. Well, what we have next is I've got something called Soundboard, which has got all the clips on it, and they're all named. And this one is, funnily enough, it's named Joe's Cream. So I wonder what that is. Let's have a look.
Hello?
Hello.
Who is this?
You tell me your name, I'll tell you mine.
I don't think so.
What's that noise?
Popcorn.
You're making popcorn?
Well, I'm getting ready to watch a video.
Really? What?
Oh, just some scary movie.
You like scary movies?
Uh-huh.
You never told me your name.
Why do you want to know my name?
I want to know who I'm looking at.
Someone is playing a deadly game.
It all began with a scream over 911.
Someone who's seen one too many scary movies. Now, he's taken his love of fear.
Hello?
Hello, Sydney.
One step too far.
Do you like scary movies?
What's the point? They're all the same. Some stupid killer stalking some big-breasted girl who can't act, who's always running up the stairs when she should be going out the front door. It's insulting.
There are certain rules that one must abide by in order to successfully survive a scary movie. Number one, you can never have sex.
Just me.
Never, ever, ever, under any circumstances, say, I'll be right back. Because you won't be back.
Get another beer. You want one?
Yeah, sure.
I'll be right back.
He didn't make the rules.
The police are always on track. If they watch Prom Night, they save time.
He just kills by them. Don't answer the phone. Don't open the door. Don't try to hide.
Okay, there's Joe's Cream for you. So tell us about it, Joe.
That was from 1996's Scream, and I remember going to the movies. I don't really remember what movie it was, but I saw this trailer, and I thought to myself, wow, this really, you know, takes me back. This looks like it's going to be, you know, something really special. And as we all know, Scream was pretty much a juggernaut at the box office. You know, it spawned all kinds of sequels and imitators. And, you know, that whole trailer has the actual narration like the old 80s films. You know, that was actually Don LaFontaine doing "Someone's Playing a Deadly Game." And it just has everything, you know, that I like in a trailer. It has that narration. It has, you know, the quick clips from the film. It kind of gives you an idea of what you're going in for. And it's just, it was a trailer for a film that's really important looking back on it. And I don't know. What do you guys think?
Well, I noticed that they used the music from the original Nightmare on Elm Street for the start of the trailer, which was something that they did a lot in trailer making. They'd use existing pieces of music, presumably because the film hadn't been scored when they were composing the trailer. Possibly. Yeah. But did you notice that the sequence of the trailer featuring Drew Barrymore was all underscored with the electro score from the first Nightmare on Elm Street?
Mm. Well, I guess it'd be kind of fitting, considering that it's a film that, you know, pays homage to a lot of those old types of films. But yeah, like I said, you know, when I saw that trailer for the first time, I knew I had to go see that at the film at the cinemas. And actually, it's a film I saw at the cinemas probably like 11 or 12 times. I loved it so much. And, you know, I've liked, you know, to a certain degree, all of the sequels, you know, most of the imitators. It really is an important film, and I think it's a really great trailer that kind of, you know, set it going on its path.
I'm surprised at how they downplay Courtney Cox's role, because she was really flying high with Friends at the time. I mean, she barely gets a look in the trailer.
Mm.
Right, right.
Ooh,
but, yeah, that's my number one.
I sort of...
Joe's Cream.
Joe's Cream. Thank you, Joe, yes, for your letting us see that. Yeah. I also remember actually seeing... it's an honourable mention. It's not my number one, but whether you love it or loathe it, I Know What You Did Last Summer has a fantastic trailer. The trailer's amazing.
I love it.
And I remember seeing that at the cinema, and that did exactly what a trailer is designed to do. And it was just that, having seen, again, it's not my number one, but if you've never seen the trailer for Humongous, when it has the boom, 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 with the letters dropping in, I Know What You Did Last Summer has a similar trailer where it kind of goes boom, boom, and it's just very, very effective. And I basically, when Scream came in like a juggernaut, like Joe said, I Know What You Did Last Summer showed that it wasn't a fluke, and it really reinvigorated the slasher movie. For better or for worse, maybe that's a discussion we'll have one time. But yeah, great. What about you, Nathan? Anything to add?
I just wanted to say I love the trailer for Scream. And the only... and I love Scream, too. Although, the character of Randy bothers me in one scene where he says if the cops would watch Prom Night, they'd save time. Prom Night and the killer's motive in Scream doesn't have anything to do with each other. And I would say that Happy Birthday to Me's motive matches Scream's more.
I think it's
my horror geekiness.
I think what he meant is that, you know, everyone is a suspect. You know, they should, you know, pay attention to everyone and not just one particular person.
It's just kind of funny that, you know, that's the one that he brought up was Prom Night. Yeah. Although I'm glad that, you know, Scream references, you know, a lot of the older slasher movies, you know, kind of appreciates them. I think that's a good thing.
Doesn't Splatter University get a mention in Scream 2?
Yes. It does. Yes.
Yeah. Yes.
Well, we'll be coming on to that very, very soon. Obviously, not literally. But before we do, we'll...
you are so filthy.
I am not.
What's Joe's Cream coming on to that? What's the matter with you?
Goodness sake. Yeah. Take your minds out of the gutter and listen to this beauty.
June night in 1980, Friday the 13th, 12 of her friends were murdered. Why should Friday the 13th, 1981, be any different? Friday the 13th, part 2. The body count continues. 14.
All doomed. You're all doomed.
15.
God.
16.
Help!
17. The 13th, part 2.
Well, that's my all-time favourite slasher movie trailer, Friday the 13th, part 2. And again, it says everything. It screams 1981, it screams body count movie, and it's got everything that you need. It's selling you everything. It's basically... It's, you know, it does what it says on the tin. It is, you know, a great trailer. And again, with that fantastic voiceover. And
that was Don LaFontaine again.
Was it him?
Yes, yeah. That was
yeah.
him.
Yeah, brilliant. How about you guys? Is that your favourite Friday trailer?
Love it. For a long time, that was the only Friday trailer I'd seen. I mean, until the advent of the internet, I had no access to any of the trailers, apart from part 2, which was on the front of my VHS copy of part 3. But yeah, I do love that trailer. It holds very special place in my heart, and of course is my favourite of the Friday the 13th series as well. I like the way as well that they're kind of cheating with the body count because they name a couple of people twice. But the idea is that it shows a flash image of a character and then the number comes up. But I mean, you get to see Ginny, and people who actually don't get killed in the film are listed in the body count. Mm. I think they do the same with the trailer for part one, which is a similar structure.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I think we've come to the end of our trailers. So if you've had your fill of trailers, what we've have next is another trailer, because we're going to move on to our feature presentation, and which is 1984 Splatter University. And Nathan, you're going to talk a bit about the film, aren't you, after this trailer for Splatter University, or Splatter U.
First, you were frightened by the Texas Chainsaw Massacre. Then you were terrorized by Halloween. And now, prepare to be pulverized, traumatized, and hospitalized by... Splatter U. More horrifying than you could possibly imagine. Unlike anything you've ever seen. More.
Hey guys, let's party!
Splatter University. Where the school colors are blood red, and not only classes are cut.
Tom? If you think you're funny, you know it!
At Splatter U, everyone parties and has a ball. At Splatter U, it's not whether you pass or fail, but whether you live or die. And when you gotta go, you gotta go. Yes, at Splatter U, the only requirement is survival. Splatter U. It's the only education you'll ever need. Enroll now at a theater near you and earn a higher degree in blood-dripping terror. Splatter U.
Okay, Nathan, take it away, please.
A maniac is... God. You know, I know I'm going to take a lot of flack in this episode, but I could take it.
Well, so I've heard. Okay.
Woo! That's more of that we were talking about a minute ago. All right, Splatter University is about a maniac who escapes a mental asylum by stabbing an orderly in the crotch and stealing his uniform. 3 years later, a young teacher is stabbed in the left breast and dies of blood loss. And the next semester later, a new teacher shows up. She is basically going to take over where the murdered teacher left off. And, you know, she's eager to teach, but kind of disappointed to find out that she's at the mercy of a classroom full of bored, pathetic excuses for college students. You know, what follows next is a harrowing tale of madness as more and more students meet untimely fates, and the final showdown will take place in the halls of Splatter University. I wrote all that out. You know, I guess you could probably tell I was reading that. I think I did a pretty good job, though. All right, that's enough patting myself on the back. You know, I know that I may be alone in this, as I have a good feeling my fellow podcast hosts will not be so kind to Splatter U, but I love it. I think it's definitely a cheesy movie, but, you know, I see a good movie kind of underneath. You know, I think that the weapon, the idea of a knife blade being hidden inside a cross is an interesting angle to take. And, you know, I'm also should say that, you know, obviously, as with every other movie, we're going to spoil it. And it's interesting to me that, you know, they kill the heroine off. I mean, you know, you kind of expect that she's going to survive and save the day. And, you know, it's kind of cruel even how they do it, because she has a boyfriend who's coming to rescue her. And, you know, he's like running down the halls trying to find her while she's fighting with the killer. And I mean, in my mind, when I was first watching it, I just assumed, oh, you know, he's going to save her and everything will be okay. But, you know, that doesn't happen. So, I mean, and she also gets killed in one of the more brutal, you know, death scenes in the movie. So I thought that was a different kind of route for the director to take. And, you know, I kind of think that the college students are pretty despicable people. I think it's interesting that how, you know, their friends or girlfriends will get killed and they could care less. I mean, they just go about their business like nothing, you know, nothing really happened. It's like no big deal. And also, I have to admit, I love the outfit that the redhead is wearing before she gets it. If you've seen the movie, you know what I'm talking about. It's very a fashion disaster. I would think Eric would agree with that.
Speaking I would, which, yeah.
What do you think, Eric?
Well, until last week, I'd never, ever seen Splatter University. I'd been scared away from it by all the negative reviews, and not just from Justin and Joseph's reviews on their websites, but also just practically every website I went to said it was awful. And you, Nathan, are the one voice that said it's actually quite good. So I sat down to watch it with a heavy heart. And I mean, I hate trauma films with a passion, of the ones I've seen. So when I was sitting down to watch this, very, very low expectations, and it started out very unpromisingly indeed. It has those comedy inmates in the asylum. There's this sort of big fat guy poking the eyes out of this doll and with a gormless expression on his face, and my eyes were rolling in my head going, oh my God, is this what the next 80 minutes are going to be like? However, I mean, the film does settle down, and I'm surprised at how... not how little humour there was, but how the humour is sort of in the background, and the film is more or less a serious attempt at a slasher film. And I don't think it's as nearly as bad as I've been led to expect. You know, I was expecting to be filled with this sort of gross-out humour that was typical of trauma films at the time, but it has this kind of serious side to it that I like, and it's got a lo-fi vibe and an energy that reminds me of another film of the era, Pranks. You know, The Dorm That Dripped Blood, it kind of reminds me of that. You know, I'm not saying it's a classic by any means, and I probably won't, it's not one I would dig out of my collection to watch on a regular basis, but I mean, I've seen plenty of films worse than it, and I don't really get why it's got such a vitriolic response from all the reviews I've read. The lead character is quite likable, and she's definitely the best actress in the film by country mile. There's another character in it. She plays the student who is pregnant, and she goes to her teacher for advice and that. I mean, she's possibly one of the worst actresses in the film, but the character herself is fairly, you know, likable. And I do love the fashion disaster that is that girl with the red hair. I mean, her hair has such a vertical reach to it that she's almost like the prototype Marge Simpson. If you like big hair, you really need to see this redhead in Splatter University. And I mean, there's a modicum of plot to it as well. I mean, it's not totally devoid of plot. There's a mystery element that doesn't really work because it kind of becomes obvious who the killer is early-ish on in the film. But the finale was a shock to me. I mean, I know you've given it away already, Nathan, but when the heroine is killed off, that was a complete surprise. And it actually is quite brutal. And it you know, it goes against the sort of more jokey elements with students. So all in all, I have to say, I did enjoy it. I mean, we've discussed this before, but the biggest crime a film can make is to be boring. And I was never bored watching Splatter University. I suppose I have to thank you, Justin, for being so negative about it on Hysteria Lives, because my expectations were so low that it could only be better than I was thinking it was going to be. And it was. Not a classic, but I think it would be sort of a 5-6 out of 10 film for me.
Oh, wow. Thank you, Eric. I'm surprised.
I'm surprised as well.
What about you, Joseph?
Well, my mother used to say, if you can't say anything nice about anything, then you should be as mean as possible. Actually, she didn't really say that, but I will be the voice of reason. I don't really like Splatter University. I mean, if I can be nice, there's some, you know, there's some unintentional comedy. I mean, it has howlingly awful dialogue. The acting is abysmal. It has a really uneven tone that kind of, you know, you're watching for 5 minutes, you're watching something they tried to take serious. And then the next minute there's these characters that have really nothing to do with the story, partaking in this off the wall kind of cool dialogue. And just to see a clip from the film. It says, "Let the party." Can you play that?
Oh, sorry, Joseph. You're breaking up there a little bit.
Can I'm sorry. It seems Grant just sent me a text message that broke me up. But anyway, okay. I was basically saying, I sent you a clip from the film that says, "Let's party" or something like that. Can you play that?
Okay. Yes. If you could just bear with me one second, because I have put it somewhere special.
Sure you have.
Well, not that kind of so special. Let's party. Right, here we go.
Let's party!
Okay.
That third scream is just hilarious. He's like,
That's a brilliant bit.
The whole that is kind of indicative of the whole film. It has this uneven tone. There's one scene I thought was particularly hilarious. This couple are at a drive-in movie theater, and the killer, you know, he pulls this girl's head back, and you think he's going to slit her throat, but instead he slices across her forehead, and apparently she dies from that because they quickly cut away from it. But there's also another scene showing the quality of the film, where one character has wandered off into the woods, and you see the point of view of the killer stalking this girl, and you can actually see the shadow of the cameraman on this girl's back, and you can see the actual camera. But I don't know. It's a movie I'm not too fond of. I probably won't ever watch it again, thankfully. It's kind of obnoxious, I think. It doesn't know if it wants to be a comedy. It doesn't know if it wants to be serious. And I understand that, you know, the director had to kind of pad out the running time because his film originally was shorter, but I think he just kind of padded it out with the wrong tone. I mean, he could have easily went back and, you know, made it the same tone as the rest of his movie, but it just doesn't work together. And I'm sorry, Nathan, I just don't like Splatter University.
Well, I guess I'll forgive you, but let's not let it happen with any other movies.
Seeing what you're about to choose, Nathan, I don't think you can promise that. But yes. So, would you like to hear what I have to say about it?
Yes,
right.
I would.
Well, I thought I'd read a very short review from IMDb, and it says, "This was the worst movie I've ever seen in my life. It was so bad, in fact, that almost it was the end of me. I was barely able to get out of bed the next day. My credit card bills are climbing. My car payment is too high. I have a mortgage that's slowly strangling me, and now I must live with the knowledge that I can never unsee Splatter University. It was almost too much to take." Now, funnily enough, it may come as a surprise that I actually quite enjoyed bits of Splatter University this time. And I do know, obviously, on Hysteria Lives, I gave it a scathing review and said it was the nadir of the slasher movie. And I still believe that. I still believe it is probably, you know, the final nail in the coffin of the slasher movie as, you know, a viable subgenre at the cinema. But I didn't hate all of it. This time I was watching it, I was actually surprised because I remember, a bit like with Eric saying, expecting it to be very kind of Troma-esque. And some bits were, but some of them came across more like a John Waters type of thing, like Mrs. Broom, the landlady, who I thought was really funny this time. I also really loved the nurse right at the beginning, smoking a cigarette, and she was just like, they ask her where somebody is, and she's sort of basically, I don't know, I'm on a coffee break, and she's just stuff like that. I kind of really liked. I also liked bits of the film when they took it seriously. I actually found probably three quarters of the film very, very boring, and I'd lost interest, and I was kind of checking email and, you know, filing my nails and stuff like that. It doesn't really engage with me. But bits when the director actually got it right, there were bits where the main character is searching around a suspect's apartment and her friend's outside in a car, and the person's apartment she's searching around, he's coming back and it's intercut. And that was really well done. And also the end with the chase scene, with the killer and the final girl, that was really well done as well. And there were bits and pieces that I thought were really good, you know, well, not really good, we're not like Halloween or Psycho or anything like that, but certainly competent. But what sunk it for me was, apart from that woman's amazing hair and her tiger pants, it just, what those, the bits that were cut in, and obviously you talked to the director and he talks a bit about this, but all those extra bits that were cut in of the students, which weren't in the rest of the movie, it just deadened the whole movie for me. I would rather it was 60 minutes long and tighter than padding it out with, you know, particularly bad actors who weren't taking it seriously. And I think the film's quite schizophrenic. The whole idea, it's a splatter movie without that much splatter you know, it's kind of, it's some of it's a bit gory, but most of it's nothing more gory than you would see in a Halloween film, a Halloween sequel. So bits of it I liked, and I agree, The Final Girl is really good. It kind of reminded me of a film like Evils of the Night, you know, that was really bad, but was fun. It was just basically a mess. But I didn't hate it as much as I did last time, or how I remember hating it before. So, you know, that has to be an improvement. So, did you want to say anything else about it, Nathan? Are you surprised by our reactions to it? Or
I'm surprised. I thought that...
God, I expected all three of you to just blast this movie like and talk about how terrible it is. And really, only Joseph has really given a scathing review. I'm surprised and impressed.
Yeah, boo.
And even
Joseph.
I liked a few minutes of it, but wow, I really thought Justin was going
to. Justin was mentioning the scene where she's rifling through the guy's apartment looking for evidence that he might be the killer. I love the way that her sort of getaway driver honks her horn outside, alerting, because when he comes back, she sneaks out, and then her friend honks the horn, and he goes, oh, wonder what that is. And he looks out the window and sees the two of them driving off. It's like it's not a very subtle way of. Yeah.
Why did she honk the horn?
Of course, just of course. We've mentioned you played the clip in the intro, but I always love the scene where she's like, he's like, something troubling me. She's like, my best friend was killed. And he's like, oh, I wasn't even thinking about that.
Yes,
and the fact that her best friend was killed yesterday.
Yeah, I love the complete lack of apathy with these characters. I mean, this one guy's like, did you hear what happened? Carol, or whatever her name was killed at the drive-in. And he's like, no shit, what was playing? Like, yeah, that's the more important thing. What was playing at the movies, not that your friend was murdered.
I mean, that's the thing. It's kind of like there were sort of funny kind of bits to it. But I stand by what I said before. I think... it probably was the kind of the final nail in the coffin of the slasher movie, because if something this bad could be playing so many cinemas, and you know, when you compare it to Halloween or any of the trailers we've done today, it is a pretty awful movie, but it has a few redeeming qualities now for me. But I like Eric, it's not a film I would come back and watch. More than once a decade.
I guess the nicest thing I can say about it is it's not the worst slasher film I've ever seen by far, but I don't think I'll ever watch it again. Hopefully, I will have to watch it again.
Hmm. I have a theory. I think that maybe the reason the three of you didn't like just completely like annihilate this movie this time is because there has been so many awful direct-to-video movies lately that it's just like lazy and shot with like a, you know, like a handheld camera, and you know, you could tell they didn't really try or anything. And Splatter University, I really think that, you know, the director tried. I mean, it may not be the greatest movie out there by far, but you know, I could tell they actually put a lot of work into it. Whereas a lot of movies today, I don't think they do.
No, I think I could agree with that.
I
think it's a fair comment. I mean, do we? I'm not sure how much you've been a dig up on the film, but should we cut to the interview with the director now?
Yes.
Okay, Nathan, do you want to introduce that?
Yes, I was able to contact the writer-director, Richard W. Haynes, and he had some funny, interesting stories to tell. So if you could play that, Justin.
Yeah, here we go.
You know, that's very strange. There was a woman killed in the school I'm teaching at. It happened a few months ago. Do you know anything about it?
Yes. I saw pictures of her body in the newspapers, blood all over the place. It was awful. Oh, I don't even want to talk about it. Now, you take when Mrs. Crawley decided to do away with her husband.
Mrs. Crawley? Who's she?
Oh, she lived here a little over a year ago. Now, all she had to do was put some arsenic into Mr. Crawley's prune juice. Went just like that. Didn't feel a thing. That's a much nicer way, don't you think?
Well, I guess my first question is, how did Splatter University come about?
Let's see, going back to 1975 to 1979, I was at NYU, and one of my roommates there was John Michaels, and we kept discussing law school about making our own horror flick when we graduated, but first we needed some professional production experience. So we both went off and we got out of NYU and worked on some low-budget pictures. I did the sound editing on Charles Kaufman's Mother's Day, and then I did some more editing on some other trauma fix, First Turn On. And John works on some movies, and then when we thought we had enough experience, we decided to give it a shot at our own picture. Now, we had very limited funds. I mean, we made the film for literally $50,000, not much, only $25,000 up front. And so we had to shoot it in 16 millimeter and then later blow it up. That was the cheapest way to go. And other films had gone that route and been very successful, like the Texas Chainsaw Massacre and Maniac. So that's how we got it going.
Great. What made you choose horror, the horror genre, for your first feature?
Well, it's the easiest genre to do. As long as you got some good effects in there, you should be able to make a successful horror flick, or at least sell one. The other reason is, going back in time, the home video market was just emerging at the time, specifically VHS. It was lucrative, as the VHS tapes were so expensive. They were being sold for anywhere from $50 to $60 wholesale. So even if you only sold a limited number of them, you could make a lot of money. Compared to DVDs now, which only cost about $1 to make. Anyway, we look into it, and the video companies, a lot of major companies were a little reluctant to sell their movies in these new formats, but not the indies. And so there were a lot of independent video companies willing to pay lots of money for low-budget independent horror flicks. So we went that route because we needed to be able to sell it. For example, Vestron Video paid $150,000 for the rights to release Splatter on VHS, and it only cost us $50,000. So, you know, right there we came out ahead. So that was the other reason. At the time, the VHS market was very, very lucrative for independent horror flicks. Most of those companies went out of business in the interim, and then the majors took over. But at the time, a lot of indie production companies and indie distributors were willing to buy product that that people like me made, so that's why we went that route.
Okay. Are you a fan of horror films? And if so, what are some of your favorites?
Yeah, I'm a fan of horror films that are very specifically character-driven horror flicks, ones that where you have very strong characterization. That way you can watch them, how I describe it, subjectively rather than objectively. I'm not a big fan of gore films or films that just have a lot of gore, people getting hacked up, because I know how the effects are done and, you know, so what. But if I can get involved with the characters, then I like the gore. You know, when they're attacked or something, I feel like I have something invested in them. So my favorite flicks would be films like Psycho, Carnival of Souls, Night of the Living Dead, Jaws, Carrie, which had really strong characterization. I don't actually like slasher films as a general rule, though. I'll make an exception to Halloween, which had good characterization. I also like horror spoofs. I don't mind the gore, actually. I like the gore in horror spoofs. So my two of my favorite horror spoofs are Paul Morrissey's Flesh for Frankenstein and Blood for Dracula, which are really, really outrageous. I saw them when they came out. Flesh for Frankenstein was in 3D. The American titles were Andy Warhol's Frankenstein and Andy Warhol's Dracula, even though he had nothing to do with them. They were Morrissey films.
Okay. Yeah, I haven't seen those, so I'll have to check those out now that you mentioned
them. Oh, check them out. They're really, really outrageous. And in fact, they influenced me.
And how difficult was it to write and direct your first feature film and to seek distribution for it?
Well, distribution wasn't a problem. I was working at Troma at the time editing their film, so, you know, I told them they could distribute it because I'd be able to keep track of it. But it was a short-term contract, and I left Troma in 1986 to form my own company to produce and market films called New Wave Film Distribution, and I've made 7 films since then. So we gave it to them first, and I got the rights back and distributed now, so that wasn't a problem. In terms of directing, I'd gone to film school, and I knew what it took to direct a film. You have to rehearse the actors, a lot of preparation. You have to storyboard all your shots, but that's not the trick. You can do all that, and then nothing goes right during a shoot. The trick is troubleshooting, and that's what makes it difficult. On the first film, I didn't have all the troubleshooting experience. What happens when you're running out of light? You know, what happens when things go wrong? What happens when an actor doesn't show up? Well, in the case of one scene, I ended up playing the role myself. I played one of the priests because the actor didn't show up. So troubleshooting is something that comes from years of experience, and that's the toughest thing for a first-time filmmaker. Not getting it all done and prepared and all the things that go wrong, how do you handle it? And, I was able to handle it, but, that was the most difficult thing for me when all the things go wrong, and how do you pick up the pieces and keep it going and get everything on film.
And I just recently found out that you had actually acted in the movie, too. As many times as I've seen Splatter University, I had no idea that you were the priest that sat in on Julie's class at the beginning.
Yeah, the guy didn't show up or got tied up, whatever, and we weren't shooting in New York City. We were shooting Mercy College, and there was nobody else to do it. All the other crew members that at one point or another been in the film as an extra or something. So I said, I guess I'll have to do it. So I put on the collar and did it, which is pretty funny because I have no religious affiliations at all. So that made my friends thought that was pretty funny, me posing as a priest.
Do you have any funny anecdotes or stories from the set?
Yeah, what happened, here's an example of troubleshooting we weren't expecting. We got permission to shoot it for the interiors of Mercy College. We used a different college for the exteriors. And they said, we have 2 weeks during the spring break. And we said, great. So we planned the whole shootout. And, a few days before the shoot, they said, bad news, got 1 week. So we had to shoot all the inside of the college in 1 week, which means I was shooting around the clock, maybe getting 2 or 3 hours of sleep. And the special effects guys, Amodio Giordano and Ralph Cordero, they didn't go home at all. They just slept there on sleeping bags. And it was such a tight shooting schedule. The classes actually started coming back while we were finishing up our last scenes, and kids were coming into the classrooms, and there's Amodio and Ralph mopping up guts and blood and everything off the classroom floor as a teacher comes in and says, "What the hell is going on here?" So I thought that was pretty funny.
When you came up with the idea for Splatter University, did you originally want to make a more tongue-in-cheek kind of slasher movie, or were you wanting it to be a more straightforward horror?
Well, if you look at the film carefully, it's actually a split film. The film was done as pretty much a straight horror flick. Eliminated all the student footage of them, you know, camping it up and stuff, and that's what the original film was. The trouble is, when I cut it together, it was only 65 minutes. It had to be at least 80. And we didn't know what to do, and we talked to a lot of distributors, and they said, it's got to be at least 80. And they said, why don't you put in some animal house type? I didn't really want to do it, but they said, that'll help. So we got non-professionals this time, mostly friends rounded them up, those students, and we shot those scenes of them partying and camping it up. And I guess that's what gave the film its camp cult following, although those scenes don't really belong in the film. Oh. The film plays better as the original 65-minute film without those guys partying and stuff. So that's how it ended up, just because, and again, we wanted to get the thing out there, and we were on a kind of a release deadline, so we had to rush out and shoot another 15 minutes worth of footage, and that's why those performances are out of whack compared to the main actors, which get better performances, but, you know, it is what it is, and like I said, that gave it its cult following, so I'll go with it. None of my other films are like that, by the way. My other films have much better technical specs. They all shot 35mm with top-notch cinematographers. I even did one in three-strip Technicolor, Space Avenger, and I did one in 3D, and so forth. But for a first film, you know, it has a following, so I'm happy for that.
Oh, yeah, I think it's great.
Well, it's not my best film, that's for sure, but at least the beginning. And I guess the other way of looking at it, I mean, how many people are going to hit Citizen Kane as their first film? You know, very few.
Right.
Most people. You know, problematical first films. But the most important thing for a filmmaker is that it makes money, and it did. It did very, very well. So no matter what you make, actually Citizen Kane bombed when it came out. So it's better to make a film that makes money as your first film so you can get financing for another one that make a film that maybe it's a great artistic success and makes no money and that's your only film. So that's another way of looking at it.
Oh, yeah, that's true. Very true. Were any scenes cut from the film?
Well, not in the video version. For theatrical, we had to play the ratings game at the time. In fact, two of my films, I got so sick of playing games with the MPAA, I just didn't bother to rate them after class at Newcomb High. What happens is that the rating system was really set up for major studio films. And they, in some cases, almost get the rating they demand because of all the money's at stake. For indie films, they tend to rate them a lot harsher than with the same content in a mainstream movie. So they gave Splatter University an X, and the film after that, they gave Class of Newcomb High an X. So to get it released in theaters, we had to cut it to an R, but the actual negatives remained uncut. And that was just the way the game played. I argued with them. I said, hey, you know, my stuff is no worse than what you see in a studio film. They don't care. So after that, I said, the hell with it, and I just started booking all my films unrated. Starting with Space Avenger.
Because you were right. I mean, there's a lot of horror movies out there that can get by with an R rating that have, you know, a lot more like blood and gore in them.
Well, the same thing with nudity. I mean, you know, if I had I have topless nudity, and I don't have any nudity in Splatter, but I have topless nudity in most of my other films. I get an automatic R, but if you're Titanic and it costs $200 million, you're going to get PG-13 because a lot of money's at stake. And, you know, the MPAA is really not that much different than the production code. The more clout you have, you know, the better they're going to treat you, so. You know, that's why David O. Selznick can get away with all the stuff he did at Gone with the Wind. He had a lot of clout. So, you know, I have no clout with the MPA. I'm not even a member. So, you know, for any independent, they're going to rate them much, much more harshly than they will for a studio film. Look at some of the early films that got X ratings. Brian De Palma's Greetings. The main problem with an X, which is why it's preferable to go unrated, is at least back then, a lot of theaters just would not book an X film, even if it was X for gore. They just don't want to do it. And also some newspapers would not accept advertising for anything rated X. So you do have the option of going unrated, but again, some theaters will not book an unrated film or not book a film without a classification. So it could limit your marketability. Maybe it would, maybe it wouldn't, but that's one of the problems you had to face back then.
And one thing I've noticed, you know, back when I first watched Splatter University is how surprised I was at what ends up happening with Julie, because killing off the main character in a horror movie was kind of rare at the time. Was it always your plan to have Julie killed off, and why did you decide to go that route?
Well, yeah, it goes all the way back in 1972. It was, like, really strange. Of all places, I went to Las Vegas Cinerama Theater, Cinerama Dome, and I saw a double bill of Ben and Night of Living Dead. And Night of Living Dead, you know, left a tremendous impact on me. Mostly, they just weren't expected as a general rule, and that's one of the reasons I did it. But And she's likable, too. She gives the best performance in the film. So, you know, I don't think people respected her to get slaughtered like that at the end.
Oh, no. She's such a nice character in the movie. So you really mm-hmm. think, oh, she's going to live. And then you kind of get the rug pulled out from under you.
Uh-huh.
So
that was the idea. So at least it gives a little bit of an edge to the film.
Did Spider University get a theatrical release?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Well, yes. It played, well, you know, going back in time, in the pre-Giuliani Times Square, it played all the grindhouses and stuff. It actually played some double bills. It played in the double bill with Igor and the Lunatics, and it played in the double bill with American Werewolf in London, and it also played drive-ins and stuff. Back then, again, we're going back in time 30 years ago, it was a completely different marketplace out there for indie films, and there were still lots of drive-ins and grindhouses. Well, they all folded in the interim. But if you could make a low-budget film, that's obviously the places you would try to get them booked, because they not only did well there, but they were willing to book it at all. So it played the Criterion in New York, which was a multiplex, and that's about the most mainstream one it did. The rest were drive-ins and grindhouses. Mm-hmm. Grindhouse audience is very interesting. They it's kind of an audience interaction thing. They talk to the screen. They yell at the screen. It's kind of fun to watch the audience in a grindhouse.
I can imagine, you know, anytime a character does something, because, you know, in a horror movie, that's just kind of the way it is. Characters make decisions that people sitting in the theater say, I'd never make. So they start screaming at the screen.
Oh, they scream at them. Yeah, don't go down there. What's the matter with you? So it's a sort of an audience participation type of cinema. that, and there's probably some drug dealing and prostitutes in there. So I used to stand in the back. I didn't go sit among the audience. I stood in the back and observed. Times Square, they had a little VHS cassette of Trailer Plane in a box, and the audiences were getting so rowdy in the Times Square denizens, they were banging on the box and stuff. They later turned off the sound, so you had to watch it without the sound. I thought that was pretty funny.
Have you considered making a sequel?
No. I got too many other things. Probably going to make, well, actually, I have in the works a sequel to my latest film, which is What Really Frightens You, but no, I don't think I want to make a sequel splatter. I mean, everybody's dead. What are you going to do with it from there? So.
Yeah, you'd have to go a whole new route with brand new characters.
Yeah, story together. I didn't really lend it the way that film was structured to have a follow-up. So it basically would just be another movie with a title, Spider University 2. So at this point in time, I don't think I want to do that.
Do you keep in contact with any of the cast and crew?
Yeah, I'm in contact. Well, Francine Forbes is now called Forbes Riley, and she's kind of a famous infomercial actress selling exercise equipment on TV. She used to work a lot with Jacqueline. You'd be channel hopping in there. She is with Jacqueline before he died. So, yeah, I'm in touch with her. Modio, who did these special effects, I'm in touch with him, but he doesn't work in the business anymore. He works for NASA now. John Michaels, my co-producer, he became a Greek Orthodox monk and then later a bishop, so I don't hear from him too often. And I'm trying to think of who else. I did find Rick Randig. I was Randig, the male lead. I was briefly in touch with him, and I don't know what happened to the rest of the people. We shot the main action 30 years ago. It was two shoots, actually. The first one was 81, and then we shot the additional footage, 82. Oh, actually, Denise, I still hear from now again. Denise takes care of her. She's on the second shoot.
Okay, great. I actually contacted Francine Forbes, and mm-hmm. she agreed to do an interview. I haven't heard back from her in about a week, but I know she's really busy.
Yeah, well, bug her, because she did the commentary. When we reissued the film on Blu-ray, she already did her commentary. So I'm sure she'll do it.
Okay.
And she did an interview for someone else, too, when I was there. So.
Well, great.
I'll keep bugging her. I'll email if you want and tell her to give you a call.
Oh, that'd be awesome if you could do that. I'd really appreciate it. I get a little like timid, like, oh, I don't know if I should keep bugging her or not.
Oh, you gotta bug her.
And I know you're still in the entertainment industry, so what are you doing today?
Today I'm talking to you. In general, I'm preparing the, as I said, my sequel. My last film was called What Really Frightens You. It's still available on DVD, still selling that. And marketed it in foreign territories, and we're preparing a sequel for it. And then I own my own film, so I own the rights to all the other ones. I'm going to start reissuing them on Blu-ray. None of them are on Blu-ray so far. So the other ones were Space Avenger. That's the one we did in Technicolor, and Head Games. Run for Cover. That was in 3D. We shot it in 3D, so we'll have that in 3D. Unsavory Characters, which was a film noir, and Soft Money. And these will all be coming out on Blu-ray in the near future as we prepare the packages. And Splatter will be coming out again on Blu-ray, as I said. We do have, I'll have commentary from me, from Francine, or Forbes Riley now, and Imodio. So you can hear what it was like working on the film, and they told some pretty outrageous stories.
Oh, I can't wait. I'll definitely be picking it up as soon as it hits the shelves.
I think the commentary will be as entertaining as the movie. I think you get a kick out of it, because it was a crazy shoot. Like all low-budget shoots, it was crazy. But fun, you know. It's a lot of fun.
No, I mean, I think it carries through, because I think it's a fun movie to watch.
It's what I call a six-pack movie. You get, you know, get a little bum watching it. It's funny.
I thank you very much, Richard, for being willing to do this interview today. It's been kind of fun going down memory lane with you on Splatter University.
Yeah, fortunately, my memory is still good. Actually, it's very good. The weird thing about being a filmmaker is it's all like one continuous production, because I've been making movies and working nonstop since I got out of college. And I've done, I've done 8 films so far, yeah. 7 I own, and I've done 8 altogether. And the first film was like the second one, and then the third one and the fourth one. It seems like one continuous production. It's kind of shocking when I finally see people, and it's been 30 years since I've seen them, and they look so different. I'm used to seeing them all the time on the movies as I make copies of it and stuff. They're almost like frozen in time, and now it's kind of strange to see them age 30 years later.
Yeah, I can imagine. I can imagine. It was interesting when I was trying to find people for interviewing Splatter University, seeing you know, what some of them look like today.
Mm-hmm. Well, Francine looks great.
Oh, she looks terrific.
But then again, she's selling exercise equipment. If I exercise all the time, I'd look better. But
me too.
I don't have the time. I don't have the time or inclination. So.
All right. Well, yeah, thank you very much. And
Sure. Send me a copy of this when you get a chance from my archive.
I definitely will.
I appreciate the interview, and thanks for calling.
All right. Thank you.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Tragedy struck St. Trinian's College again today. Cynthia Lockheed, a sociology teacher, was found brutally murdered in a storage closet. Police have shut down the school for the day while they continue their investigation. School official Father Jensen commented that if this matter is not resolved within the week, the school will suffer irreparable damage as a result.
All right, and that was Richard W. Haynes, and I really appreciate him taking the time out to you know, talk to me about Splatter University. It was interesting to learn a little bit more about the film. And let's see, do either of you have any trivia to share about the movie?
Okay, well, Eric? I got one. Yes, I have one bit. As you know, I specialize in the exploring the musical aspects of these films, and there's a fantastic dance sequence in a bar, I think it is, where they're all standing around a jukebox dancing out of time, as is the norm for these type of films, to a piece of cheesy rockabilly music. Now, it may come to surprise you, Joseph and Nathan, that the band playing that piece of music are called the Pedestrians, and they are from Tennessee. They're from a town called Elizabethton. Do you know it?
No.
No?
I believe it's near Kingston, actually.
Okay, well, that's where they're from, and they're actually now known as the Tennessee Pedestrians, and they released a 4-track EP in 1983, and all 4 tracks apparently appear on the soundtrack to Splatter University, although if you ask me, it sounds like the same song repeated over and over again. It's called You Don't Like Me is the name of the song in that they play in the bar. It says on their official website, it says it was used in the trailer and can be heard over the goofy jukebox scene in Splatter University. So I don't know it doesn't sound like they're terribly proud of having their music in the film.
well, yes.
Well, their music kind of fit the film.
It is. Normally, it's Justin's job to completely diss the 80s music in these films, but I think I kind of go along with him in this one. It is kind of awful, but kind of compulsively awful, if you know what I mean.
It's catchy.
Yeah.
I like that one. I like the other one. What is it? She's the Fugitive Kind. They play
that.
She's
like run away. That's like the foosball of Splatter University.
Justin, what do you think of the music?
What do I think of the music? Well, it was kind of mostly like 50s tinge.
It's like rockabilly. It's like Stray Cats or something. But
yeah. It was all right. I mean, it fitted the movie pretty well, I kind of guess. But again, a lot of it reminded me, that's another reason why it kind of reminded me of like an early John Waters film, where they have kind of those kind of like 50s music running through it. It'd be interesting to know actually if the director was a John Waters fan and that's what he was trying to do. Certainly with a film like Movie House Massacre, they were definitely trying to make a John Waters type slasher movie.
Ooh, thank you for bringing that up. I love Movie House Massacre. That could be
a
potential pick.
Fuck you.
Well, I've got an interesting story with Movie House Massacre. Exactly. Well, you know Selena, the woman who plays Selena, the really bratty usherette in Movie House Massacre.
Oh, yeah, my favorite character.
And she's amazing. And I had on the review picture of her, because do you remember she kind of goes, I'm the main attraction, and pulls open her blouse and shakes her tits at the audience. And she wrote to me and she said, hi, I'm, I can't remember what her name was now, actually, Joanna, that was it, Joanna Morales. And she said, oh, thank you for showing my tits all over the internet. And I was like, oh dear, I didn't, you know, I said, I'll take it down. She said, no, I don't really mind. And so I chatted to, with her for a bit and I got an interview with her. And then basically she got stalker and asked me to take it all down. Well, the interview, that is. So... But yeah, so there you go. But she was really funny. She's just like a character. But she said that the guy who directed it, whose name escapes me, was a complete and utter asshole.
Alice Rayleigh, it says here on your website. Yeah,
it was Alice Rayleigh, but that's a pseudonym. It was actually
Rick Sloan. Fred,
yeah, that's right. But she said it was directed. He purposely wanted it to be like John Waters. They thought they were all thinking they're making a John Waters type movie. So but anyway. Oh.
I can't believe that somebody stalked her, and you took that was one of my favorite interviews because I always laughed every time I read it. People, please stop stalking these celebrities and ruining it for the rest of us.
I know. Bless her. But I actually sent her a copy of Movie House Massacre because she didn't have one, but I hadn't heard from him for years. But she was really funny. She really made me laugh, and she would be a great interview if we can. I've still got her address, so if we did it, maybe we could get hold of her if she's got rid of her stalker. So,
you know that Madonna once had a stalker called Bob Hoskins.
Oh, really?
Yeah, not the same one though.
And that's slightly ironic, isn't it? Because, well, there's probably someone we know stalks Bob Hoskins.
I know somebody who does. So.
Do you? Okay.
Yeah.
So, any more splatter you trivia?
I have something. Yeah. Kind of going with the tone, the uneven tone of the film. Pay attention to the very beginning of the film. The mental patient who, you know, turns out to be the killer, he's referred to as William Graham. But at the end of the film, he's referred to as Daniel Graham. So they kind of got mixed up there.
Okay.
Maybe it was his middle name.
Maybe. I think his middle name was Clancy.
Oh, okay.
So, you know, they messed up. I just have to give this film as much grief as I can.
Okay. What about
the more
you,
grief
Nathan?
You give it, the more I'm going to pick films that you love, Joseph.
I love everything else.
All right.
What about you, Nathan? Have you got, because we're going to be talking to The Final Girl, aren't we?
Yes.
Coming up shortly. But have you got any trivia for the film?
Yes. I actually do have trivia this time.
Oh.
Let's see. I know that Ralph Cordero, who did some of the special effects for the movie, was only 16 when he worked on Splatter University.
Wow.
So, you know, not too bad to be, you know, that young, you know, having to deal with special effects. Of course, he had help, obviously.
Mm.
I also know that the drive-in that they shot the movie in was in Peekskill, New York. And at the time they were shooting the movie, the film Alligator was playing.
Okay.
And actually that theater later played Splatter University.
Oh, really? Well, that's great.
Yeah. Denise Teixeira, I think is how you pronounce her last name. She's the redhead with the awesome fashion sense. She was actually the poster girl for the film Zombie Island Massacre, even though she never appeared in that movie.
Okay.
And last but not least, speaking of people who was never in the movie, the girl on the poster of Splatter University is Elizabeth Catan. And best known for being in Friday the 13th Part 7 for me as Robin.
Mm. Oh, really? Okay.
Yep, that's Elizabeth Catan.
It's a great... I love the one-sheet poster for it. It's,
me too.
More so than the film, but it's a great poster, isn't it?
Yeah.
I had that poster a long time ago. It got messed up in a flood.
Oh, God.
You lost a lot of stuff in that flood, Joseph.
Yeah, well...
Oh, dear. That's my worst nightmare, to get a big flood. Well, not my worst nightmare, but as far as my movie memorabilia goes, or a fire would be pretty bad. But anything else, Nathan?
The only other thing I have is that Vestron Video had released it in cut and uncut versions. Hmm. But really, the only thing the uncut one had is just some extra bloodshed. Right. That's about it for me.
Okay. Well, I've got a few bits and pieces. The film was released in America on the 13th of July, 1984. It was still in release in 1985 as well. And it was actually, I've got a feeling it was teamed up with a zombie movie as a double bill. I don't know if it was Zombie Island Massacre, but it was obviously Troma put it out, and I think they struck 200 prints, and it was obviously in a regional rollout across the States. It didn't come out in the UK at the cinema, but it did come out on video in 1986 under the title Campus Killings, and they cut out a whole second. And I remember way, way back in, probably sort of back in the mid to late 80s, I picked up a book, and in the book it actually had a still of the scene where the woman's lying on the bathroom floor with her guts, entrails hanging out. And I remember thinking, wow, this must be the worst, as in the most gory, slasher movie. And I think that's part of the reason why I was so disappointed when I finally saw it, that I thought it was going to be a really gory, you know, it's kind of basically the ultimate slasher movie. And it wasn't for me. But just a couple of other little things. In Germany, it was released as High School of Horror. And that's about it, really. I don't think I've got anything else. I think it didn't, when I've looked at Variety, it didn't make a huge amount of money, I don't think. It said it basically made lowly amounts of money at the cinema, but obviously did enough to probably bankroll Troma's more famous films, like Toxic Avenger and some of those others. So, that's Splatter U.
Actually, from what I'm reading, at one point, I think maybe it was a working title, but apparently it was going to be called Campus Killings.
Okay.
But it was in the UK, right?
That's in the UK.
That's the cut version.
That was the cut version.
Did you mention that?
I'm not sure if I mentioned Campus Killings.
You did mention it, yeah. Okay. It was cut by one second.
Yeah, it was released in the UK on video, but I've never seen anything. I've never seen a cover.
I mean, did you mention that it was called Campus Killings? Because apparently I didn't pick up on it. If you did, so I apologize.
He did.
Okay.
Never mind then.
Yeah. Well,
stop thinking about Pamela Anderson.
I'm trying to find stuff to talk about. I don't want to be the lone guy who has nothing to say about it, but whatever.
Well, it's just one of those films that we don't have a lot about. But what we do have, why don't we cut to the next interview? Nathan, would you like to introduce it?
Yes, I was able to get in touch with Francine Forbes, who's now known as Forbes Riley. So if you could play that clip.
Yeah, here we go.
Here it is.
Oh. It's all good stuff for me?
It's addressed to you, isn't it?
Yeah, but I never ordered any of it. God, I guess the school must have sent it over. Great, I'm probably in some idiot list now.
I know what you mean. When Mr. Bloom died, Happy Valley Cemetery sent me all kinds of junk mail. Lists and prices of cemetery lots. Certainly not ready to move in there yet.
Is that all, Mrs. Bloom?
Did you remember to lock the front entrance door?
Yes, Mrs. Bloom.
Can never be too careful these days, you know.
Good night, Mrs. Bloom.
How did you get involved with Splatter University?
Well, you know, it's interesting because all my life I wanted to be an actress. And I started out in high school. I went to an amazing high school where we did, just like Glee, we did 6 musicals a year and lots of plays. And I'm a good dancer. I was a girl who always fought her weight. I always had 10 to 15 extra pounds on me, so it was always an issue for me. And I couldn't sing. So I got to do the dramas, but I couldn't do the musicals. And I didn't really get to live the dream that I wanted to. So I went off to college thinking I was supposed to be a lawyer. Studied very hard, and interesting enough, while I was in school, I actually had a chance to star in Shakespeare play and a couple of other plays, and my drama teacher said, you know, this is what you should be doing, and I thought, really? My parents paid all this money for college. They're not going to like hearing this. And I packed up after school. I graduated college, get this, with 2 degrees in 3 years. I was his brain, but I went to a very academic school, so I didn't really play a lot. I thought, I'm going to be an actress. And I went off to New York, and literally the very first audition that I went to was Splatter University.
Was it difficult taking on a leading role for your first acting job?
Well, because here's the thing, it wasn't my very first leading role. You have to remember, if you do a Shakespeare play, that's 2.5 hours of doing Shakespearean lines. I played Rosalind As You Like It, you know, for almost 3 hours a night on stage. And I've done theater my whole life. So I've always had leading roles. It didn't, by the way. And I don't mean to sound boastful, but it didn't surprise me because I didn't want to do anything less than the lead. You know, I grew up watching movies and thought that's exactly where I was supposed to be. I wanted to dance with Fred Astaire and Gene Kelly. And I mean, I'm a major movie file. I would sit in the dark theater since the time I was a little girl. And I believe that I learned all about life on so many levels from watching movies. know, human interaction, living in different places, being on different planets. Who knows what you, but I absolutely embrace film. And so one of the things that was most interesting to me was when I met Richard Haynes, the director. You know, here I was only 20 years old, but I had a huge film library in my head. And I think he and I spent the whole time we're shooting just talking about old movies and different styles and genres. And I just loved it more than you could possibly imagine. So what's interesting, too, is I'd never starred in a film. I had no idea, absolutely not, how movies were made, which is really interesting because this was, to me, this was film school. I was so nervous about having the lead in this that I memorized the entire script, not just my part, but everything. So, and Rich will tell you this, that halfway through our script, our filming, our production manager quit. So not only did I do the lead in the film, there was no continuity girl. I tell people I invented continuity on this film because I didn't realize, you know, you do a play, you start at 0 and you go to 100 and you do the entire thing. Well, in a movie, you can do, you know, page 69 on your first day. It doesn't matter to anybody, but as an actress, that's damn confusing. And so one of the things that we had was we were filming in the hallways of a school, and we were filming one of the hallways. I said, but Rich, what happens when I turn the corner? Are we going to film that next? He said, no, no, no. He said, we film everything in the script that's filmed in this hallway. And I said, but I have to change my clothes 6 times. How will I ever remember what I was wearing when you go to shoot the other scene? And he's like, write it down. I thought, oh, my God, well, that's continuity. In fact, every set that I've ever been on, I'm a stickler because that's what I had to do on my first film was I had to write down and remember everything, what I wore, what the earrings were, what my hair looked like. Because we were a guerrilla production. So we designed almost all of that. And so far, I don't think there's too many continuity mistakes, but I will take credit for the lack of mistakes.
I thought you were terrific in the film, and even all the reviews I've read, you know, even the ones that weren't favorable towards the film, you know, most of them say that the lead actress was very good.
Well, you want to know what's heartbreaking, and I could cry just hearing you say that, because I did just get a chance to watch the whole film when I did my commentary. But that movie did not lead to anything professionally. No one while it was out there saw it. I couldn't get an agent in LA. It's not what led to my next movie. What led to my next movie was me pounding the pavement and hounding some producer for the second film I did to get my SAG card. But I couldn't figure out how to create a film career. And that's so very sweet of you to say, because I look at that little girl and she wanted to be Julia Roberts so bad. She wanted to be a film actress so bad. And I just really had no connections, you know, like Goldie Hawn's daughter does, or I didn't know anybody. I was so lucky that first time out of the gate, and I really could never recreate that. I've worked in a lot of movies since, but I've never gotten to the level that I thought that actress in that movie should have gotten to.
And I understand what Richard was going for with the ending, but it really bothered me to see your character get killed at the end. I thought it was really kind of sad, actually.
And I love the fact that you feel that way, because it breaks my heart that the one character in the movie that wanted to set everything straight actually dies. And, you know, what's interesting about it, it sets off a very unique tone. You leave the theater, I think, and you think that, you know, there is a death of innocence, and there is an evilness that prevails in the world. I mean, you don't know if that guy gets caught. You know, it's what happens. It's what you kind of predict that he does in the film. But I think it's a very bold statement. You know, most movies have that happy ending, or, you know, the killer, you're not sure what he's going to do next. But for the lead actress, I thought that was a very bold move. I was very torn. As a person, I was very mad at Richard that he would put that out into the world. As an actress, I love getting to play it. Don't kid yourself. That's really fun. But it really should touch you that, you know, that kind of spirit, that kind of good person should continue. And I know every time I see, like, the assassination of a president or a political leader that's trying to do good, I'm reminded that sometimes the good die.
Do you have any fun behind-the-scenes stories you could share?
Well, you know, now here's what's important to remember. It was 30 years ago. And so here's a couple of things that I remember. Number one, I was the only actress that got to stay. You know, we didn't have much of a budget. So I actually got to sleep at the director's home, because we shot about an hour outside of New York City. And I remember him telling me, and I didn't really know what this meant at 20, that his parents had mortgaged their house for this film. But I do remember that our craft services and our food every day was pretty much apples and peanut butter. And if you wanted more, you had to go buy it. It was, you know, it was a weird kind of lonely experience, because, you know, Rich is a little bit of a misogynistic male, and he's the first one to admit it. and I was pretty much the only, you know, normal female. You know, we had a couple fun actors, but they all came up from the train, you know, to shoot that day, and I'd go home by myself. And it was a very intense, rather lonely, and incredibly exciting project. You know, here I am, the lead in my very, very first film, but I'm also given, you know, a sense of power. I mean, I created the clothes. I shopped for all the clothes. I had to make sure our continuity worked. And there's a lot of responsibility. I remember laughing a lot, but I remember being like, it was felt like somebody handed me my dream. I could not have worked harder on that show. I mean, I that's all we did for 3 weeks was eat, sleep, live, and breathe this movie. And I thought that we were making, I mean, if you take out, by the way, if you take out the kind of really teenage slasher stuff, which is Rich's original film, I don't know if he shared this with you, but his original film only ended up being like 82 minutes long, or less, 75 maybe. It had none of the gratuitous stuff. It was pretty much the story of this teacher, given the slasher stuff. And it's a powerful little indie kind of film when you take out the silly stuff. And that was the script that we shot, and that was the movie that I thought we were making an important independent movie. And then, of course, you know, when I saw it and all the parameters of releasing a movie at the time and all the silly TNA stuff, I was a little disappointed that it kind of went down that road. But, you know, that was the time, and Rich knew what would sell. And he had actually offered to cut out that and give me back an original cut of this movie because it's a different feel when you just look at it from that perspective.
You know, the movie does have some serious issues, like the scene where you and Kathy discuss her considering getting an abortion. So there are actually some serious issues going on amongst all the kind of goofiness with the other teenagers.
Well, that's the movie that I thought we were making. And, you know, I went into it, and I mean, you probably realize that because the tone of my character is not silly or, you know, she does scream a lot, and you do think that she should leave the school at some point when she realizes that enough people have died. But that's just kind of how she's wired, you know. If you analyze the fact that she was committed to taking over a position where somebody had been murdered, you know, that's a pretty gutsy thing. And she had an awful lot of heart and a little bit of Nancy Drew, and it was all very intriguing, and it ultimately killed her, which is just so, should be very sad. You should leave the film and go, we just watched an innocent little flower being stepped on by somebody, by an innocent bystander, and it just went away. And you should leave going, wow, how much of an impact can I make in my life by doing positive things and helping people and pushing the envelope? So, again, it'd be fun to see the movie without all the, you know, the gross stuff in a real theater. I'm working on getting Rich to help me do that down in Florida because it turned out to be a very lovely little fan base. And, you know, it's funny because for so long, in my early part of my career, you even think about the name, Splatter University, sounds kind of funny. I used to be embarrassed about the film, primarily because of all those scenes. But it's been such a lovely full circle to be the age that I am, to still be out in the public eye working, and that people appreciate. I don't think I could be more excited and honored the fact that anybody is watching Splatter University.
Splatter University does have a fan following. I actually talked to Richard about that a few days ago.
Well, then I guess I need to go do now one of those events where people can actually meet me. Let's go do a little signing. I'd love to meet. Because I don't look a whole lot there. You know, it's interesting. I love the fact that, you know, Julie Parker, actually, she lived. Forbes Riley grew up, changed her name, has a great career, is out there helping women, and has this lovely lead in a movie to tell. I'd love to see how big it could get.
And what are you doing today? What have you done since Splatter University?
Well, I did a whole bunch of movies since and television, but like I said, I never had that superstar agent or people backing me that could have taken me to the next level in that arena, which is very sad. So I ended up doing an awful lot of infomercials. I don't know if you've seen the Jack LaLanne juicer. I now own my own fitness company that is a multimillion-dollar company. It's international. I will send you a video clip that E! News and Forbes magazine just did on me. How ironic it would be called Forbes magazine. Thursday night, I just won a huge award over Tony Robbins for best female live presenter on television. I took my career to a very different level. As an actress, you have no control over your career unless you're producing the movies. And even though, remember Pia Zadora, she tried to do that? She tried by marrying a rich guy who said, I'll put you in movies. I never did that. And I couldn't figure out how Hollywood worked fast enough to get to be the actress that I thought I could be. I did an episode of 24 and, you know, all the little things. But in the world of business, there are no rules. There is nobody telling you you can or can't. In fact, there's lots of people telling you can't, and I laugh at those people. I love those people. Come on, give me more than I can, because everything you say I can't, that's what I do. And I do it bigger and better than you would have ever imagined, because I don't live by the same limitations that other people do. And I don't know where I got all that, but I'll tell you what, it's been inspiring. It's been inspiring just to hang out with Rich. You know, Rich had a little dream of creating movies he wanted to on his own terms. Nobody tells Rich what kind of movies to make. He does his own thing. Well, I managed to do my own thing as well, and it has been exhilarating. I mean, my goal right now is to take on Tony Robbins, who's one of the most amazing, you know, motivational speakers you've ever seen.
All right. Well, wrapping up, thank you very much, Forbes. It's been great chatting with you.
All right, Ian. Well, thank you so very much.
Miss Collins.
Yeah?
We were wondering if you know.
Oh, William Graham missed our appointment this morning. Do you know where we can find him?
I haven't the faintest idea. I'm on my coffee break.
Thanks. See what happens when you cut staff?
All right, and that was Forbes Riley. And I have to admit, I had the hardest time, she and I did, trying to finally get a hold of each other. Luckily, Richard...
Eric, you're just very immature today.
No, Justin said Justin went tee-hee first.
It's just the way that stuff gets pronounced. You know, you don't think about it while you're saying it until it's too late.
And then it comes off all wrong.
Okay. I'm going to try this. She and I had the most difficult time having a telephone conversation with each other. Because, you know, either she was going to a meeting or, you know, I was not near my phone when she tried to call me. But she finally, you know, did keep trying to get in contact with me on the telephone. Mm-hmm. The interview turned out pretty well, I think. Some interesting comments in there. But anyway, let's see. What's left with Splatter University, you guys?
Well, if we ever release a DVD of our show, we need to put the original audio of that interview of yours.
No, because you can't hear it. You can't hear anything I say.
Yeah, it's like, Nathan.
I sound like Sylvester the cat.
Wow, that would have been good. Well, we'll play that for a special edition. Definitely.
One thing I did note about Splatter University is that it's yet another slasher film that has an unnecessary toilet scene in it. It has a woman.
Yes,
a woman sitting on the loo, going. Yeah, it's like the female version of Harold from Friday the 13th Part 3.
Also, I found out. I don't know if you know this, but apparently, Splatter University at one point was also known as Campus Killings.
Oh,
yeah.
Thank you.
By the way, it was also released in the UK as Campus Killings.
Did you know? Did you know that it's Toya's favorite film?
That should give it more clout with Eric.
Yeah, definitely. That's my favorite film now as well. I've changed my mind.
Is it?
The bathroom scene is kind of sleazy because, you know, she's a teacher. And, you know, not only is it showing her actually go to the bathroom, but, I mean, she's, like, drawing on the walls and stuff, too. I mean,
teachers need to go to the toilet, too.
Yeah, but she's riding on the walls.
Pans over from her. Well, the one thing I always wondered, it pans over from her, and then you see the killer's legs. What I'm wondering is, was he standing there waiting for her, or was he actually, you know, dropping a deuce waiting on her?
Well, he's in the women's bathroom. Why would he be in there?
I think
I've often been in a women's bathroom.
Maybe he needed to go, and he's like, well, you know, I'm going to kill her anyway. I might as well, you know, clean my bowels.
Have we actually spoiled the film? Because, I mean, obviously, you always spoil the film.
We haven't. I was going to
bring up... The killer is the Monsignor in the wheelchair. That's the spoiler.
Yeah, the dean of the school is the killer. And one thing I did like, and that's actually more of a serious scene in the film, is after he kills the heroine and he goes back to his office, you know, the love interest comes into his office, you know, like pretty much knowing that he's the killer after he's found his dead girlfriend. And he, the dean of the school is like, trying to say, like, what are you doing? Did you break in here? And the guy looks at the wall, and when he turns around, the cross is bleeding. I thought that was actually a pretty nice touch in an otherwise cheesy movie.
Yeah.
I got a question for you guys pertaining to Splatter University.
Okay.
What do you think, how do you think a guy who was in a mental institution could escape and immediately get a job as a Monsignor, you know, which is a trusted position? How does he do that?
Well, Catholic priests have done a lot worse than that, haven't they?
Yeah. Fake ID.
He probably just threw on, you know, a priest outfit and just walked in.
Well, they do say at the end, it's like, oh, don't they check records anymore? Mm. Oh, they will in future, or something like that in the final scene. Yeah, I mean, it is a bit silly, but it's no sillier than anything else in the film.
This is true. Mm. Especially with him going, you know, I've damned my soul by allowing these women to drain my precious fluids.
Yeah.
Well, at least it was seriously.
At least it was women draining his precious fluids and not, you know.
What, is it, does he mean like his 7-Up from the
fridge? It could be, you know.
He doesn't have any of those other Catholic predilections, I think.
Well, I was brought up Catholic, and I'm sure... Were you, Eric? Are you?
And you turned out fine.
I turned out fine.
No,
I was brought up a Protestant. Were you?
Yeah.
Oh, well,
I've got it worse. I was brought up Southern Baptist.
Oh, my God.
That's when they scream and yell in the church and run up and down the aisles. I was scared to death. That was scarier to me than any horror movie.
Is that why your dad screams at movies?
No. My dad screams at movies because he's got a temper problem. You guys should hear my dad. He'll watch a movie like... He watched the first Saw, and at the end, the fact that, you know, spoiler alert, but everybody should have seen it by now, the fact that the killer gets away with it, my dad's just jumping up and down. Who does that bastard think he is?
Was this in the cinema?
No, it was at home.
Oh, it's okay. So, do you do tongues and stuff?
I don't think they ever spoke in tongues at the church I was brought up in, but they did do a lot of screaming, and one woman would always faint. She would just like collapse in the aisle and just lay there for like 10 minutes and then get back up and start jumping around again.
Sounds more exciting than the church services I was dragged to as a child.
And you had to go to these services? You actually went to
these
services?
Yeah, my parents made me.
Oh, wow.
When I got old enough, I didn't go anymore.
That explains a lot, actually.
I always wanted to be a Satanist. It just looks like nonstop sex.
Satanist.
For everyone listening out there. Everyone listening out there, that explains a lot. I've known Nathan for 10 years personally, so that explains a lot now.
But if you watch all those Euro horror movies, Justin, from the 70s, it makes Satanism look really sexy.
Yeah, it is sexy.
It's all sex. Everybody's just sex.
Who wouldn't want a big red hot poker going up their ass?
Edward II?
That's a pitchfork, isn't it? Not a poker.
I said poker. Red. Oh. Red hot poker. Okay. I was throwing a little innuendo in there.
I get it. See, it takes me a while. I'm the dumb one in the podcast, so, you know, it takes me a while to get stuff into my brain.
Oh, don't put yourself down, Nathan.
Once again, our episode is going to hell. No pun intended.
I think the listeners, kind of expect it now, you know, that we're going to get off topic at the end. You know?
The rambling on. We probably just need to be tighter, don't we? So, on that bombshell,
you're very immature today, Justin.
Yeah, and you're 56 years of age. You should
56. I know. 56. I need taking
you're
in hand.
You're almost as old as Susie. You should stop that. Yeah. Almost as old as Susie, and you're acting that way.
Yeah,
I think it's funny because Justin's saying these comments on purpose, and I'm doing my best to try to avoid them. But you know, I'm just stumbling into them. We tried to get a hold of each other.
If you put your mind to it, Nathan, I'm sure you can pull it off. Right. Okay.
Up for all these, you guys.
Yes, it's time. It's time for us to fade off and go off into the grand hereafter or whatever it is. And what we'll do now, thanks for everyone joining us for yet another scattershot approach. And there's plenty more to come. And I hope you enjoyed this podcast.
Scatologically scattershot.
Scatological, yes. No more cats flushing toilets until next time. But it's time to say a fond adieu, a fond farewell to Splatter University. So thanks for joining us, and thanks to my fellow podcasters for sitting down for over almost 2 hours of talking crap. But we love talking crap, so we'll fade on. God, I can't speak now. My brain is finally melting.
Big sweaty ball sack. There, I had to be immature one last time.
Thank you. And on that butt shell, here we go. Until next time.
Bye.
wonder things like that happen. Them showing all those horror movies.